meeting. A special word of welcome to the Minister of Public Works, Jeff, and the Deputy Minister. We see that the Deputy Minister, Bokopane Zulu, is very multi-skilled in terms of camera and so on. I would like to see those photos, because she doubted the skill and said that she might cut some people's heads off here. So we'll have to check and so on. But I think you are doing very well, Deputy Minister. Welcome. DG as well and team, welcome. We've got the full complement here of the Portfolio Committee. I say full unless one member, Comrade Denny Kikana, who will be joining us in the next few minutes. We've got an apology from Honorable Loretta Jacobus. So that's where we are. For those that we see each other for the first time this year, Happy New Year. For those that we have seen at the beginning of the year, Happy New Financial Year. That phrase I got from the minister today. We are here to discuss the strategic plan and the budget for the Department of Public Works. I take it that I can see the spirits are very high. That's what we want to see. And the members are also very happy to see you back here. Without further ado, let me give to the minister to do what he is here to do.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks for the opportunity to yourself and to the committee members. Thanks for affording us this opportunity to come and present the strategic plan and the budget. But I think before we begin, let us, for the purposes of the committee knowing who we've brought with, the team is led by the Deputy Minister and myself, and I'll ask Acting DG to then introduce his team. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair and Honourable Members and Minister, DM. I'm Sam Vugela, I'm Acting DG. I'll suggest that each one of us introduce ourselves, from starting from Adam.
Morning, Honourable Members. My name is Adam Tombini. I'm heading Intergovernmental Relations and Parliamentary Support in the Department.
Morning, Honourable Members. My name is Kathy Mutsisi. I am the Chief Financial Officer.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Lydia Pukui. I'm responsible for policy.
Morning, everyone. My name is Laiki Mochadiban. I'm the Acting DG Corporate Services.
Good morning, Chair. Honourable Members, my name is Stanley Anderson. I'm the Acting DG for the Expanded Public Works Program.
Good morning, Chair. Honourable Members, my name is Peter Chiapas, Acting DG for Inner City Project Management and Professional Services. Thank you.
Honourable Members, my name is Mandla Mabuza, DDG Special Projects. Thanks.
Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members. I'm Sasa Subin, Acting DDG Asset Investment Management.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Monita Prinsler. I'm the Chief Director Trading Account.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Peter Vitalik. I'm one of the advisors of Minister Brochen.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Mandy Saf Akela Lindi. I'm the Chief Director of Strategic Management.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Florence Rabada. I'm at Asset Investment Management and heading the Asset Register Unit. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Matuto Mutumi. I'm the head in the office of the Deputy Minister.
Morning, Honourable Members. My name is Lita Gazmunguva. I'm the Public Lives and Office Deputy Minister.
Morning, Chair and Members. My name is Ngozina Tinomatita. I work in the Ministry. Thank you.
Good morning, Members. Good morning, Chair. Shoaib Denison, I work in the Ministry.
Morning, Chair. Desmond Golding, one of Minister's advisors. Thank you. Morning, Chair, Honourable Members, Kokia Sufa Chani, Media Liaison in the Ministry.
Good morning, I'm Kilebo Khilesi Chivelo, Chief Director, EPWP Operations.
Are we done? Okay. Anybody else who wants to introduce himself or herself? No? Go ahead. Minister, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and to the Honourable Members. Chairperson, thanks once again for the opportunity to interact with the committee, and we view this as a very important part of our role and the work that we have to do. The committee has in the past played a very constructive role in guiding us, alerting us to areas where we need to improve and sharpen our focus, and we trust that this interaction will be one such occasion where we will learn from yourselves as you do your work as the authority that we account to, and we do appreciate the interactions that we've had previously, and we look forward to further interactions on the work that we are presenting today. And, Chairperson, the intention was to bring all the relevant people to assist in this process today so that we give the honourable members of the committee maximum opportunity and an opportunity for them to optimally utilise the availability of the officials present so that they are the experts in their fields and they are the persons that can certainly assist honourable members to grapple with information. Chairperson, just to give ourselves a sense of the space we find ourselves in, the department, led by the Minister and Deputy Minister, has taken stock of our situation, and we found that very often we are the custodians of very good policy, but the policy has found itself gathering dust, and sometimes we need to revisit and find out where we went wrong so that we can achieve the objectives and we can move with the times. And clearly we came up with a phrase that we feel really accurately describes the space that we find ourselves in now. And that is that we need to review, reshape and rejuvenate our department. You'll find that in many instances we have policies, we have guidelines, we have directives, we have the mandate which is clear in the ruling party manifesto, we have the outcomes of the cabinet lekhutla, the State of the Nation address, the budget speech, and then somehow we get very busy in-house looking inwardly at what the things are that we need to do on a day-to-day basis, and we need to make sure that we keep our eye on the ball so that we focus on our core mandate. And in looking at this, Chairperson, we found that if you look at one of the issues the committee raised was the issue of vacancies. If you begin to look at our structure, we found that our structure over the years has moved far away from responding to the mandate, the core mandate of public works, and that in that our mandate has become diluted. We've moved further and further away into becoming an administrative wing rather than one that is very technical, because if you look at our core mandate, our mandates very clearly are very technical and they deal with the fundamentals of a state, which is assets and procurement. So we've looked at our structure and we're in the process of doing so, and it became very clear to us that we need to look at a structure that can support service delivery. If you look at other examples, we've just got back, Chairperson, as I reported to you yesterday from an interesting visit to India. The Department of Public Works in India, and Urban Planning as it's called, has between 6,000 and 7,000 professionals employed in public works, registered professionals, engineers, civil engineers, structural engineers, and that speaks to the kind of department that public works needs to work towards. It will take us many years to get there. It might not be possible, but clearly the kind of mandate that public works has, we have to raise the bar in terms of the kinds of skills that we are able to attract and to retain, because people with those kinds of skills get taken up by the private sector and it's very difficult to retain them. And we want a structure that's going to be able to respond to the core functions. You'll know, Chairperson, and the Honourable Members will know that our client departments are not the very happiest departments. And we've been looking at why this unhappiness exists and how we can respond to these issues. And if you get back to the point that I made earlier, if you want to respond to that mandate, you've got to ask yourself, is our business model correct? And are we structured to respond to that business model to ensure that we can deliver on service? So one of the things that we've really agreed on as this team, that we really need to look at how we address these issues. We've got to try and attract more and more skilled people into our team so that we are able to respond with relevant professionals in the relevant portfolios so that we can ensure that we move from an informed basis. This will assist us enormously in reducing our dependency on consultants. Because if we move in that direction, it means that we can do a lot of the work in-house. And if you look back many years in the history of this department, many, many years ago, that's exactly what used to happen. When you wanted expert advice on building or construction or what use of material needed to be used in government departments, public works was the department you'd get that information from. So where have we gone wrong? Secondly, Chairperson, it's the issue of IT, the use of IT in public works. You know that one of the problems that we have with the Auditor General year after year is on asset management. Now, had we moved our IT in step with our mandate many years ago, it would have been very simple today to be sitting with computers in front of you here as members of Parliament and knowing exactly where we are in terms of our asset register. That's where we want to get to. We are looking at systems currently. We're looking at best practice in other countries to see where we can take our IT so that it assists us in going forward, so that we can, in fact, have a system where you can log into our website. Of course, it would be all the security levels would be provided, but in this IT day and age, really, is there a need for us to be quibbling about what is there and what isn't there when it could be made available? And that would assist us with accountability to Parliament. Chairperson, we've also agreed that we should look more carefully at effective and efficient financial management. We've made, I think, extensive progress from where we were in 2008 when I became minister. And certainly, I think we are beginning to take the turn. This is not an overnight problem that you can fix, and the shortcomings in the financial management system can lead to serious problems in terms of how we spend taxpayers' money, which we are very meticulously monitoring and making sure that we build the internal controls. But more than this is the fact that we know what we need to do. We know that the PFMA is there, and we know we need to comply, but we need to make sure that the systems talk to it. Now, one of the things I found very strange, having come from Parliament myself and been responsible for the IT in Parliament, is that I found the email system in public works simply didn't work. So I thought when I had problems in Parliament, I thought we were the worst, but I got to public works and I found out that that was even a bigger challenge. So it is that kind of IT system that you need to build. Now, those are fundamentals if you're in a department that does procurement on a daily basis and looks after state assets. So there's a lot to be done in terms of our IT. That's going to cost a lot of money, and I'm not sure whether we'll get that off the budget from the fiscus. The entities that account to us, such as the CBE, the IDT, Agrimore South Africa, and CIDB, we will be having interactions with them because we also want them to adopt the outcomes-based thinking and performance agreements in government. We want them to think along those lines so that we can begin to take them forward. It's a good thing sometimes to say we've registered X number of thousand emerging contractors on grade one, but what happens to them? Why are you parking them in grade one? What is your plan with them? Because by the fact that you've registered them, it means you've created an expectation. And are we able to assist those people? So do our contractor development programs, do our property incubator programs, do they speak to the people we've parked there? Because we've created the hope and now suddenly it falls away. So we've got to look at those entities and begin to look at how we can empower them to make sure that we actually address some of the expectations. And in our role in providing and playing a role, Chairperson, in the new growth path, as you're aware, in other clusters within government, there is a new growth path that is being planned. There is the new industrial program, and we have a significant role to play in that. Sometimes we are not in the lead department, sometimes we are in support departments, as a support department, and sometimes we are there as a collective, which the cluster system helps us to do. So we have to continuously look at what our role is. And one of the things that we've picked up, Chairperson, is that whilst we might think we are doing very well in BEE, the reality on the ground is that it is not as rosy as we might want to think it is. If you look at the number of black professional companies, architects, quantity surveyors, you name them, that try and register on Public Works' roster and simply sit for 5 or 6 years without getting a single job, that tells you that there's a problem. So what are we doing about it? And I'm not speaking here as a single department. Remember that there are provincial departments of public works. And although we operate differently to some of the concurrent functions, for instance, housing operates differently to public works in terms of how it relates to its provincial departments, and health operates in a different way to us. We somehow have a qualification in the constitution that moves us slightly aside from that. But never mind that. We have to provide the broad policy national framework within which provinces we must guide provinces to function. So we need to look at a system, and the National Department of Public Works needs to provide an IT system that can assist provinces in some of the things I'm talking about. Because if you look at an IT system to address the assets, it's not only for the National Department of Public Works, but it's also an asset system that we can emulate in the provinces, so that those assets that, in terms of Kiama, that are looked after or the provinces are the custodian of, they can also emulate and work on the same system, so that there's accessibility for all of us on the common system that indicates the three different spheres where the properties are allocated, and that can be done with IT. It's a bit late in the day, and it's going to be very costly, but it's something that we have to look at. The same with our roster systems. Are the provinces aware of who resides in their towns, in their cities, in their provinces that can offer professional services? Sometimes you get complaints that somebody from KZN got a job in the Northwest when there's somebody in the Northwest that could have done it, and all sorts of things. So we've got to look at how we provide these areas of management tools, if one can call it that. We want those to become tools of trade within public works, that information is available and provide the leadership for that. Our Ria Patala program is working well, although we seem to pick up a lot of problems from provinces and even through the presidential hotline. Chairperson, between 80 and 90% of the issues that get raised with the presidential hotline actually relate to provinces and not to ourselves. We have our own hotline in terms of payments, and that's working well, and CFO will speak to that, where we are trying our level best to bring down the number of days outstanding to contractors. We would like to see an ideal situation where we are able to pay 30 days from date of invoice, so that we make sure that contractors are not out of business because of us paying late or not paying at all. And if there are disputes, what is the dispute resolution mechanism within that particular period so that you speed up that process? I've spoken about skills development, Chairperson, across the built environment. This demands new leadership from us. It demands new leadership in terms of we have the entities, we have the professional councils. We need to provide more strategic leadership. We need to see more people. Minister and Deputy Minister need to be going out into the schools and talking and tertiary institutions, encouraging people to look at the built environment. I was very impressed, Chairperson, when I was invited by a group of young women engineers recently, and I was the keynote speaker. And I found that in this huge group of women gathered there, they were all engineers. Now, we need to encourage that. We need to expose that working group of women. They have a name. I don't remember what the name is, Adam. I think it's Saweng, South African Women in Engineering. Saweng, yeah. And a very dynamic group. So they could do it on their own. How do we look at how they did it and encourage it? Because it was quite interesting to see some of the photographic material. Some of them are civil engineers, some of them are surveyors, some of them are electrical engineers, across the engineering spectrum. We need to encourage people to come into the built environment. I know sometimes it doesn't seem the most sort of fashionable industry, but I think Deputy Minister herself has been working quite hard on this and talking to women in construction. But it needs new dynamic leadership so that we can bring in a new wave of interest into the built environment and assisting our entities that operate in this. The CIDB and CBE, we've got to look at external partnerships. For instance, there are big companies that we need to talk to. How do we take our EPWP into construction sites and vice versa on a number of the other programs? How do we bring skills development into big construction sites? One can always ask, if you've built a particular structure for government and you go back and you look at the statistics and you see how many apprentices did we enroll, how many women were involved. Those are the specifics that we look at when we involve the EPWP in building sites. So that assists us to empower young people and women in particular, and then vulnerable groups. Chairperson, the registration and of professionals has improved dramatically. We need to see more of this happening. There have been challenges in the professional councils, and we've been working closely with them. We've developed very close working relationships. We'll be starting again, and maybe the committee could also consider this, that professional councils themselves maybe make an appearance to the committee to speak about transformation and registration of professionals. I think it would assist us tremendously if we got the committee's support in this. But I think it would speak for itself that there are signs that this is happening on a faster rate. I don't think it's happening as fast as we should, and that's why we said not only on the registration point do we need to come in, but we need to come in at a much earlier level together with higher education and other departments and look at how we can assist in this process, because this we need to invest for the future and make sure that we are able to provide the skills for ongoing sustainability of the built environment. We need to look at the uptake of young people. We have a national youth service in our department that we want to resuscitate. We want to give it a bit of oxygen. We're not convinced that it is doing as well as it should be. And we want to turn this into a flagship directorate, because we believe that there's a lot of work to be done for the young people of this country. And Deputy Minister has that responsibility of looking at how we can restructure that branch and make sure, and maybe give it a bit more status within the department, so that we can link with the National Youth Development Agency and work with them. In many cases, we would be a supportive role or play a supportive role as public works in other areas of government, and certainly we feel that we have a lot to do in this regard. So that's one of the areas that we'd like to see happening very soon. On the role of the IDT, I think, Chairperson, you and the Honourable Members are aware of the role of the IDT and the role it's playing in the new and urgent priority which government has identified, which is rural development, poverty eradication, and also the role they play in education and health infrastructure and job creation. As you know, that we are in the process of applying for recapitalization of the IDT, and we hope that Treasury and Cabinet will look on this favorably, but we've submitted our request, and we hope that we get a positive response. But in the interim, Chairperson, it is clear that even the IDT needs to think outside the box. And we need to look at how we can engage. If you look, for instance, the challenges that basic education have in terms of school infrastructure, I think we need to provide the leadership together with basic education, talk to the DBSA, talk to funding agencies, so that we can actually have a program that takes us forward to rid ourselves of mud schools. You are aware that the IDT spent millions of their own resources to eradicate some of the mud schools, but I think government needs to come to the party, and other funding institutions need to come to the party, so that we can begin to see more progress. The uptake in provinces was very good, but I think going ahead, we need to actually see those numbers of mud schools come down. The EPWP remains our main intervention in terms of responding to the economic crisis, poverty alleviation and income inequality through work opportunities. And that Chairperson will soon have the figures for the end of the financial year, and will share those with the committee so that you are kept abreast of developments in that particular portfolio. chairperson around the EPWP, we have to also bear in mind that the targets for this financial year are more or less the same as last year, but in the next financial year they jump substantially. And we've got to make sure that we are geared for that jump. We would like to see us running slightly ahead in this financial year so that we ease the jump for the third year. And that's going to be important. That's why, Chairperson, we are looking at other labor-intensive projects that get done overseas in other countries and looking at how we can learn from those best practices, because clearly it's not going to be enough to simply look at the current EPWP model and think that we're going to get maximum benefit out of it. We've got to continuously look at our model and see how we can improve on it. And the EPWP team is working at a roadshow that we'll be visiting provinces to have a look at how provinces are moving with this particular process. Of course, the one thing we must explain, Chairperson, I'm sure the committee knows this, is that we, of course, don't sit with the money. The money sits with provincial and local governments and other spheres. It doesn't sit with public works. Sometimes we are expected to go out there and start projects, but of course that doesn't. The money doesn't sit with us. But the coordination is going well, and in the high-level review that was done by the presidency, we've agreed that we'll bring in a new structure that will be convened by myself with the help of the Cabinet Secretariat. We will bring in all the line function ministries to get buy-in and see how we can raise the number of work opportunities being created, because there is a lot of opportunity out there, and it's a matter of taking the available budgets as they are reflected in the estimates of national expenditure and making sure that we in fact create those jobs that we are looking for. Chairperson, we're also looking at a green strategy. We're working with the Department of Energy in a joint CAB memorandum that will go to Cabinet very soon, which involves energy efficiency and looking at developing codes for green buildings as far as government is concerned. So we're moving ahead in terms of that green strategy, and we'll certainly request an opportunity to come and share some of our ideas with you, and you can enrich our thinking around some of these issues. So when we take it to Cabinet, we are going with a document that's been well thrown through. Chairperson, then focusing on the core mandate, it's about our role that we play as the Department of Public Works to support the developmental state objectives and policy priorities, and to use our immovable asset footprint is something that we want to share with you as well in a few weeks to come. We'll talk about this when we get to the property management trading entity, is that we believe that Public Works has a wonderful opportunity to turn around the government accommodation portfolio. There is enormous potential for our department, and if we are able to convince Treasury of some of our ideas, it will see us being able to access resources to rehabilitate state buildings and to make sure that government utilizes all the vacant properties. And I think members of the committee are aware, more aware than myself, of how some of these buildings lie vacant for many years and they become occupied. And you'll see from the figures that are presented, Chairperson, the number of buildings that Public Works owns. We need to ask ourselves, do we need to sit with 108,000 properties, or do we need to sit with 50,000 well-managed leased properties that we can say, this is really where government is going? Some of the properties we own are railway sidings. We can't do anything about that, because sometimes it's in the Karoo and nobody wants to live near there. So, but if you have 25 houses in King Williamstown, people can't pay rent. We're not geared for a rental housing scheme. What do we want to do with those properties? There needs to be a decision taken. We must provide leadership, take a decision, take that money and invest it somewhere else so that we actually get going with our core mandate. Because what has happened is that Public Works has become the collection basket. After 94, some properties were devolved to provinces. When the provinces ran into trouble, then they give them back to Public Works. But by the time we go there, they've got occupants. Now, you can't just push somebody out and evict them. You've got to provide alternate accommodation, and that's what happened in a recent court judgment. So you can't just put somebody out of the 32 houses in King Williamstown and say, just find your own. We need to sell these now as government. We need to use this money elsewhere. You've got to be careful how you go about it. So the hot potatoes get given back to us, and then we sit with a problem. But we've got to look at this asset portfolio. Is it an economic player? We believe it has potential. It can take us forward. But sitting with 108,000 properties, can't pay rates for the properties. We're unable to maintain them. Really, we've got to make a call at some stage. And that's clearly something that we're very determined to do. We'll also have to look at how we buy in new assets. You can't just sit with your old assets and think you're going to maintain them forever. Some of them you might have to depart or you'll have to dispose of and buy new assets, because assets have a life. Some of them have reached their sell-by date many years ago, and you're just pouring good money on bad because you're not able to make a decision. So we've got to change the way we think about our asset portfolio. And government's demands are growing. As you know, since the last election, we've got new departments, and we battle to find accommodation for them. And some of the accommodation that government departments are in is certainly not worth the money that we are paying. We are paying too much for leased accommodation, and yet we're sitting with empty buildings. So it's to get that balance right. We're not saying that we don't want to lease. We also have to look at how we bring previously disadvantaged role players into the property lease portfolio, and Public Works is certainly the department to do that. But we've got to make sure that we are coming in at the right price. So there's a lot that we'll be doing and coming back to you on the movable asset footprint. Also linked to this, chairperson, is the department's disposal policy. We don't have a disposal policy as yet, and there's a draft on the table, and certainly I would like to ask the department at some stage to come and share that with the committee, because that's a policy that we want to approve in the course of this financial year and begin implementing it. If you look at our movable assets, we are sitting with dozens and dozens of storerooms of furniture which came out of Acacia Park and everywhere else. Now the rats are enjoying themselves, and every year you've got to go back and you've got to encounter the same old chair because it's got to be done annually. Is that what we want? Is that the best use of taxpayers' money? And we've got to make sure that it's fireproof, and we've got to make sure that it's secure. Is that what we want? Why don't we take a decision? Do we want to use this furniture, or don't we want to use it? And then have a disposal policy that guides us in an open and transparent manner so that we make sure that we can dispose of those assets and the money can go to the fiscus. That will cost us less than what we are doing at present. So we've got to look at how we deal with those assets. And that disposal policy will help us deal with immovable and movable. Chairperson, the refurbishment of land ports of entry, we'll talk to in a little bit more detail, and our Dolomite project, but those are very crucial. There have been agreements entered into between our country and other countries to improve the border posts, and some of them are lagging behind because of difficulties that we've had, like landmines in the area. In one case, we found out that between ourselves and a country that we are in partnership with, in terms of the border post, we haven't actually signed the bilateral agreement. That happened a few years ago, but we've got to rectify that. And we'll continue with the important aspect of accessibility of public buildings to disabled people. We think we're lagging far behind in that, and we need to make sure that we expedite that program. And generally speaking, in terms of our reviewing our service delivery models, Chairperson, just very briefly, that's the main thrust of where we want to go. But on the property aspect, as I was saying, Chairperson, which is very important, one of the biggest criticisms Public Works has from client departments is that, firstly, there's some confusion around where the money sits and where the money doesn't sit and what Public Works should do and what it shouldn't do. Now, these problems are historical. However, they are on our watch, and we have to look and see how we can assist our client departments. We move from the premise that we need to improve our service delivery to our clients, be they correctional services, be they home affairs. It doesn't matter who the client is. In us getting back our mandate, we've got to get that right, because there's no use saying we want to get our mandate back and yet we're not providing the service and we're not quite sure why we can't provide the service. So those are the aspects that our strategic plan is beginning to address and take us forward. We've got to expedite the customer service level agreements. As you are aware, there are some that were outstanding, and we need to expedite that. We need to expedite the improving the operational efficiencies of our debtors book and revenue management. And big strides have been made by that. CFO has been able to bring down that amount substantially. And that's what we need some of the IT systems for, so that we can have better management systems. For instance, we have a very manual system if we want to see how many MPs are in arrears with their rentals in Acacia or Pelican or Laboria. It's a very time-consuming exercise. We would like an age analysis to be printed at the end of the month, and the next day you can say, that's what you owe. And if there's a dispute, let's resolve it. So those are some of the things that we need to look at and get right. We are moving towards from a cash basis to an accrual system in terms of our accounting model as required by the Auditor General. And we want to finalize these new business models and business cases as a matter of urgency within this financial year, so that we can bring Public Works back into the professional entity it's supposed to be, both on property, construction, as well as all the other delivery areas that we are expected to move on. And something that is lacking in our system is efficient risk management. That is sometimes one of the problems we have in terms of delivering on our services to clients. And then lastly is the issue of dealing with fraud and corruption in a very decisive manner. And you are aware, Chair, that we've taken a very bold decision, the team that's with me and myself, that it's all about zero tolerance on corruption. And the SIU is in there doing its work, and the steering committee is chaired by the acting DG. And it's a determination of all the senior management in Public Works, the minister and the deputy minister, that we need to crack this and get rid of it. If it's there, it must go. If it's not there, then fine, we've got a clean bill of health. We'll see what comes out of the SIU. And the people that are working with the SIU are committed, and I've been getting good progress reports in terms of where we are going. Jay, if I can just mention one last thing on the asset management, is that the Cabinet Lekhutla put together a team, which is led by myself, the Minister of Finance, and the Minister of Rural Development and Land Reform. This interministerial committee has been put together to look at the assets and the asset registers of government. And that is at all three spheres. We met, and the role players in that are the Minister, Deputy Minister of Public Works, the other two ministers as mentioned, and then also the Auditor General and the Accountant General. And the meeting took place last year, the first meeting, and the Accountant General is now leading the technical team, which will come back and report to us within the course of the next few months on the work that they've done. This is to look at it from a deed registry point of view, an asset register point of view, and it cuts across all three departments together with the Ministry of Finance. And once we get that technical report back, the next meeting will be held with provinces as well as local government. And this will assist tremendously in the implementation of GIAMA and some of the challenges that we are having there. But I thought I'll mention this, Chairperson. It's still early days for that committee, but I thought I should mention that that is what the Cabinet Lekhutla had decided, and that's certainly work that is underway and in progress. Chairperson, and if I can just take you briefly through the medium-term strategic framework priorities, we'd like to just reiterate on some of them. Some of them we've mentioned before. And these are the issues that will inform our planning going ahead. Government has made it very clear that we need to speed up growth, economic growth, and we need to look at further transforming the economy and creating decent work and sustainable livelihoods. And for this, we serve on the economic cluster in Cabinet, and that is where we report in terms of the work that EPWP is doing, and also I'm a minister that is responsible for reporting to NEDLAC on these issues. Chairperson, you will see from our build program that we are using our resources to contribute towards building of social and economic infrastructure where it falls within our mandate. We are assisting extensively with rural development strategy and also in terms of land and agrarian reform. The two custodian departments for land are rural development and land reform and ourselves, Public Works. And we are looking at audits being done of who owns what agricultural land and what is it being used for and how can we use it better. There is a draft report or a preliminary report that we've sent on to the ministers concerned, and we wait their feedback. Strengthening our skills and human resource base, as mentioned, intensify our fight against crime and corruption, pursuing African advancement and enhanced international cooperation. And this is a new area for us, Chairperson, as Public Works. We are getting requests from several African countries to come and share the experiences of the expanded Public Works program. And also we've had a request at our recent visit in India to head a trade delegation to India of contractors. There is a wish from the Minister of Public Works in India that we bring contractors from our country to go and visit India and explore the opportunities that exist in construction, especially highway, road construction, and other construction, as the country has an extensive build program that it wants to achieve. Building the developmental state, including improvement of public services and strengthening democratic institutions, is one of those priorities. Chairperson, you will be aware that we can't expect Home Affairs to deliver passports from a little office in Mzumkulu that happens to be in somebody's kitchen. We've got to provide proper facilities. I know that it's also an issue of resources, but we've got to provide that support to all our government and client departments to make sure that we can deliver the services that are expected. Our six goals, Chairperson, very briefly. I've mentioned that we need to provide strategic leadership in terms of immovable asset management and delivery of infrastructure, and certainly we are making inroads as far as that's concerned, promoting an enabling environment for the creation of both short and sustainable work opportunities, and as well as the skills development elements, and the objectives there are to create jobs and to fight poverty. Then to contribute to the building of a developmental state with our role that we play in the comprehensive rural development framework and how we can use our state assets in that regard, to ensure transformation and regulation of the construction and property industries to ensure economic growth and development, to ensure cooperative governance and sound resource management, to ensure improved service delivery in all departmental programs to meet client expectations and leverage stakeholder relations. Chairperson, you, as I mentioned earlier, the four outcomes that we've looked at that relate to us out of the 12 that Cabinet took a decision on is to create decent employment through inclusive economic growth, create efficient, competitive, and responsive infrastructure network, efficient and effective development of development-orientated public service, and an empowered, fair, and inclusive citizenship and skilled and capable workforce to support an inclusive growth path. Chairperson, with that brief report, I'm sorry if I took a little bit too much time, but thanks for your understanding in terms of us presenting in a little bit more detail than maybe we would have under tight constraints, time constraints, but thank you very much. I think this assists us to present to the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Minister. The details were quite important. I think time cannot be a political argument today. We just have to accept that. We've got to do this thoroughly because we have been waiting for this opportunity to get this. And thank you very much. It's quite refreshing, actually, to get this type of perspective, noting where we come. Welcome, Comrade Denny. Thank you, Kana. What is also refreshing is that we've got both the Minister and Deputy Minister and a big delegation here. All expertise from the Department of Public Works are here today, so we feel very much empowered. Maybe not to the tune that we have in India, the professionals that you're looking for, so many, but we contend with what we have, and we must make do with what we have for now. Minister, what you have not touched in your overview is legislation. And I'm not sure whether that's coming in the other inputs, but that's something that I think has been on our radar screen to say that part of what we need to do is to strengthen that capacity and so on. So you might just want to touch on that just to set us at ease. You see, I would want members just to take limited comments, because I would not want to treat you as a minister of religion, where you just stand in the pulpit, speak, and nobody asks any questions. You see, I know that we'll be coming to the details as will be presented, but if there are any things that members want to just highlight, comment, ask, get clarity on, we will do that. But with the understanding that we will be coming to the details. That's the one issue. The second issue, maybe the DG will also answer that going forward. The AG, is he happy with our progress now? Are we going to be fighting at the end of the year or not yet? You see, are we working towards a clean order? You see, because that we want to be proud of this department. The other matter that worries me is the Rea Patala question that you raised, Minister. You see, we've been attending some other debates. Let me just give you an example of GCIS for you. So we're going to be having a rollover because the money we have belongs to public works. We are still waiting for the invoice. Just to make an example, to say that what we do or do not do affect other departments. And I think this matter was raised in the previous engagement where public works is such a strategic department whereby if we don't do certain things, those impact on others. If you take correctional services, for instance, in terms of their assets, land, and things like those, if public works doesn't do certain things in terms of asset registration, then they also get a qualified report. So those are just the matters that I'm raising just to highlight some of the issues that the minister has raised. Lastly, on my side is just the professional councils. We do have a outstanding appointment with them to say we would want to meet with them. We are encouraged by the minister's input that says registration is improving. You see? But it's improving, that's the matter that the issue that we want to hear, and the recapitalization of the IDT, and so on. What is striking is that we've got such a strategic portfolio of public works, poverty eradication, and so on and so on, and the opportunities in municipalities that are not exploited to their maximum. For instance, if we look into your quarterly reports for the last quarter, in terms of the uptake of the incentives, for instance, appropriations is meeting you tomorrow and so on, but they are not happy with that type of situation. I'm just raising that as an example. Yeah, perform lunch. Okay. Members, there we are. Are there any issues that you just want to take as the first, just a bite, you know? The details, we are getting into the details now, the program, in terms of the budget that is here. But if you just want to say one or three, a comment or something, we'll give to you. I see Bradeni at the back. I see Babu Masango, Babu Kaila, going. There is no follow-up, ne? Okay. Those are the only three.
Thanks very much, Chair. Mr. Minister, two things, skills and properties. Just on properties, I just want to know, because indeed whether you're talking in immovable property or movable property, land, farms, buildings, furniture. In our communities, people see all these things go to rot, and they know they need them. People want to start businesses, people want to start income-generating projects. They see these properties, and at times these properties get vandalized. They become crime hives, and they need them, and they think they can use them because they are starving. All it says is that NC government is so incompetent, we are starving, capacity is there, facilities are there, we are not allowed to use them. Now, this has been going on for a long time. In this case, in Soweto, for example, I know properties. For the last 10, 15 years, they've been there idle. Now, my question is, how are we going to do this? Because we keep on talking about it. How are we going? You know, I know Johannesburg, for example, had an agency called Johannesburg Property Development. They appointed a special agency to assess, get rid when necessary by selling, lease when necessary. They'll do all that. on behalf of Johannesburg. It is called Johannesburg Property District there. Do you have the capacity to do it ourselves nationally, or do we think we must form a structure that will do it on our behalf? Otherwise, you're going to talk about it again for the next 20 years. On skills, GIPSA, ASCISA, even Polokwane resolutions have said indeed we need skills, especially professional skills, which are important. Remember, if you don't have, engineers are very strategic because these are the guys who can open up factories and employ people. Without professional skills, the economy will never grow because, and jobs can't be created because these are actually strategic people who are responsible for running companies, for running government institutions, for running construction. You can't build roads without them. Now, the point is, in ASCISA, they said we needed, and GIPSA, they said we needed to produce we are producing 500, and we need to produce 1,000 per year. And the plan then was that interim will get them from India because, as compared to Europe, they are a bit reasonable, Cuba and so on, while in the time being, we're preparing our own youth and taking them to school, and which is long term. Now, I just want to know, that target that was set, in fact, as Kisa was saying, we can produce up to 2,000 so that we meet the demands of the country. In terms of the specification, because unless we speak on specification, if we keep on saying we're increasingly or very fast producing them, it really doesn't give us a sense whether we're meeting the target or we're not meeting the target. If it can be answered now, the professional council, if it come, would like it to answer that, because otherwise we don't know where we are. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks to the Minister. Minister, thanks what you have said. I agree almost in everything what you said. Especially, you know, we are new in this department, but when I was reading through this department, I couldn't understand why this department doesn't have professional, technical people. That was something also that was surprising. But you have looked at that, I feel. And the other thing that I could understand why now we still talk about intake of students. I mean, this department should be the one that mostly take up the students so that, because you are dealing with professionals, you are dealing with all those things. It should be the department that always makes special intake to the students. But, Minister, you have talked about rejuvenate and reshape this department and all those things. But I still have a concern that this department is still headless. And I don't know how are you going to get it all right if you still run this department headless and you want to regenerate it and reshape it, whereas there is no leadership. Something that you should take into consideration also is that, Minister, any organization needs a healthy or a vibrant relationship to can go forward. And if there is no vibrant or healthy relationship, things fall apart. And we've been reading in the newspaper last year, even now, where the minister was in a, you know, in fighting with his staff and all those things, left and right. And the minister didn't respond on all these things, just to find out what is that thing. The other thing I just want to find out, Minister, you have been in the newspaper talking about forensic audit. Is that being implemented or are you still thinking about it? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, thank you. See a perfume lunch. Yeah, see a perfume. Babukai.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Minister. I think you said a mouthful, Minister. But just clarity on a few issues. The guidance to provinces, what type of guidance would you give to provinces? Because what we have found is that most of the service providers in provinces, some of them are paid within 90 days, 120 days. And is there any assistance that you can give to those service providers? Because most of those service providers are the emerging sectors, especially emerging contractors. That's why you have thousands of them lying in grade one, because they are not paid in time. Secondly, on skills, have you got a database or do you work with the institution of higher education? Because there are a lot of our youth that are going around with certificates, engineering certificates, architect certificates, and they need skills to enter the market. Is there any database or is there any cooperation that we have with these institutions of higher learning? Because I think if you have that database, in the next 5 years, we won't be talking about skills, because out there, there are thousands that have got these certificates. They just cannot get jobs, and they are laundering around. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think that's enough for now. The only one thing that I'm worried about, Minister, is the sale of the family silver. You see, I wouldn't be in a hurry to sell as much as possible. We still bemoaning the waterfront, okay? That slipped under our feet in a very creative way. But that's not public works, that's enterprises, you see. So we don't want to have that situation where we again want to come and... So all I'm saying is that, yes, let's dispose, but let's know what we have first before we rush to disposal. You see, and the people who are occupying state houses and so on, particularly the local government level, it's, you see, is Kiama going to be extended? This task team, what's happening there? Just try and put us at ease there, and then we come to, we give the DG. And, you know, we've always, let me not leave the acting positions, you see. We've asked it the last time as well, why do you, having so many people acting in a department that needs skills like this? What is the problem? I don't know if you say the department is headless, do you mean the DG, acting DG, or you mean the head? Of the...
No, I'm talking about the department, not the political one.
Oh, not the political leadership. Administrative leadership. You must be very clear, you see. Okay. Yeah, that one has a head. You see, we are worried about this uncertainty. If it goes on for too long, it becomes a show. It becomes Hollywood. Okay.
Chairperson, let's start with that one first. The last. Chairperson, we had a process last year where we advertised twice for the position of DG, and we had a total of 54 applicants, and given some of the challenges we were facing at that particular stage, we felt let's not rush and finalize this position, and maybe with hindsight it was a wise move, because there have been further developments since. But we're happy to say that on the 26th of April, not because it's my birthday, but that is the day on which we'll be interviewing the candidates for the DG position. We have also in the interim run adverts for COO, Chief Operations Officer. That has closed, and we were trying to put a panel together for the 30th of April, but the information I got this morning is that the panel that we were trying to secure for the 30th, there are ministers that have now got other commitments, so we'll have to look at a date sometime in May. But that is to fill the positions of COO, two DDGs, am I correct, acting DG? Three DDGs and COO, and by then we should have finalized the DG. So that is as far as we have gone there. So that will then bring an end to Hollywood, and it will give us back our department to public works. Also, Chairperson, I must say that the process, although it might seem as though everybody is acting, I want to just say that The incumbents in these positions that have been acting have really played a good role, a significant leadership role, and we're very happy that they were able to assist us at the time when we needed them. That, Chairperson, brings me to the next point of that Babu Masango raised about the forensic audit. You'll remember the fight last year was after an agreement with the then acting DG, who sat in on the presentation with a company called Cliff Decker and Comperio, after agreeing that those people would be appointed to do the kind of forensic investigation that we wanted, he changed his mind about that and went to the media. That was his role as acting DG. It was simply that I wanted to satisfy myself as minister that this is the direction we wanted to take to guide that process, because you can't have a forensic audit that's a witch hunt. It has to be a forensic audit that would go into the procurement processes and would straddle a number of areas that we know that we've got problems in. And that is where the disagreement came about. But that, in fact, was not my call as to whether it gets signed off and gets appointed. That was the call of the then acting DG. What has since happened is, given the areas that we've identified in our procurement systems that need attention, we then requested the SIU to come and do that work for us. The SIU is currently busy with the work that it needs to do for the proclamation. I'm told they are 70 or 80% there, and soon the proclamation will be done. So the preliminary work to do the proclamation is actually the scope of their investigation after the proclamation. So that work is already underway, and they're working closely with our senior management in terms of those investigations. So that's where the forensic type of investigation ended and where the SIU came on board. I think the SIU came on board in December. Am I correct, Acting DG? It's around about December, yeah. So the work that's been done by the SIU will also strengthen our senior management in identifying areas where there have been weaknesses, because the whole of public works is about procurement, whether it's about leasing space, whether it's about contracting or doing a building, it doesn't matter. It's all about procurement. So it's important that we get that side of our business right. So when those results are out, I'm sure that it will be common cause that we bring them to the committee for you to also have access to those reports. So that's where we are, and the SIU has given progress report indicating that it's heading in the right direction and that we'll see progress very soon. Then, if I can...
Just before you move away from that point.
Sure.
To clarify. Okay, I think that Roma Sabo is happy that the street fight is over. I take it that that matter is buried. Now, if you say the SIU, are they busy with investigations or are they busy with some proclamation? What is the terms of reference?
I don't know about the technical terms of it. It would appear to me that before they can get into the in-depth investigations and do what the SIU does thereafter, after it finds any wrongdoing, if there is wrongdoing, it would appear to me that they would need a presidential proclamation. So there's preliminary work they need to do, which is almost like a preliminary investigation. As I'm saying, they're between 70 and 80% towards the work they need to do towards getting a proclamation. And once that is submitted to the president then issues the proclamation, and then the serious investigating work starts. But it doesn't mean to say that there's no investigation at the moment. The investigations that need to be there have to justify why there needs to be a proclamation. So that's why I'm referring it to as preliminary work that the SIU is doing. And we're hoping that in the near future there will be a proclamation so that, in fact, the serious investigations can start, and whatever consequences need to follow thereon, the proclamation then assists them to do that. It's a very legal, technical process, but that's basically the way I understand it. I don't know if the acting DG would like to give a little bit more on that, but that's how I understand it to be. But that is work in progress, Chairperson. As we speak, the SIU is in our department. And then on the issue of, let me go back to Honorable Kekana. Honorable Kekana, that is a very big challenge you raise. I said, I don't know if you were in the meeting when I said that we've done a quick review of what is on our records in terms of farms and what some of the land is being used for. We've submitted that to Agriculture and Rural Development. We're waiting for a response from them as to what they would like to collaborate on and then what they'd like to work with us on. But in terms of properties, we get lots of queries. We have a Talk to Minister email address, and it's inundated with property queries from different provinces. We investigate all these. We get calls. We get letters. It is something that even local government, we've addressed the local government summit that was held by the Minister of COPTA. We addressed that, and we asked municipalities and mayors specifically to get in touch with us if there are properties that they can put to better use. And there are a number of municipalities that are beginning to respond. However, we investigate those, and I'm sure SASSA will speak to that if you need more detail. We investigate those, but sometimes they are not held by the National Department of Public Works. Sometimes they are held by the provinces, and in some instances they might even be held by client departments. But it's a matter of us, if there are any specifics, we'd be certainly willing to assist to verify where these properties are held in custody and how we can try and assist. But there are municipalities that are utilizing our services and talking to us. And where we have been able to free up properties for housing or other municipal functions, we've gladly done so. We've transferred land. But sometimes provinces and local government are slow in coming to us, and some of them we've had to ask them to free up land and to assist us. So it's a two-way street. But clearly, there's a lot more that can be done. We don't have a specific unit within Public Works that would look at it like the Johannesburg property example you gave, because it would be very huge in terms of what we'd have to put in place. But I think it is something that through MINMEC we must encourage, that, and the issue of us paying rates actually illustrates to us who these properties belong to, where they are, and so when municipalities are interacting with us, it does assist us to understand. But I think there's a lot of work to be done in this field, Honorable Kekana, and I don't have all the answers for you, but certainly I think we'll have to do something where MPs know their specific properties. We are more than willing to listen to them and investigate. On the movable assets, I had given an example that our disposal policy, which will come to the committee, needs to come and address some of these issues of the furniture that we own. You know that we own a lot of furniture. Some of it is in storerooms. We have to maintain that furniture. Even if it is in storerooms, we have to maintain the storerooms. We have to keep them secure. We've got to take stock every year, and it's costing a lot of money to do so, sometimes worth much more. We spend much more than what the furniture is worth. And sometimes it's outside the scope, as the chairperson said, the family silver. It's not furniture that's of any particular value or significance. And sometimes we need to have that ability to make those decisions and dispose of. On the issue of skills, we will work closely with other departments. This is the mandate of the Department of Higher Education and the Minister of Higher Education. But certainly we will play our supportive role in whatever way we can in terms of these skills. I'm not quite sure whether GIPSA and ASGISA would fall into the mandate of that the new ministry, but certainly we provide whatever support we can in this process. We feel that we can also assist by looking at even our interns. Should we not be looking at those graduates that are sitting with relevant qualifications that we can bring into the department? That's why our organogram is important, and that's why the structure, the business model becomes important, so that we can ease up some scope to give openings to some of the qualified people. And there are a number of them in our department already that are benefiting from these processes. Babu Masango, I think I responded to your issues. Honorable Gala, I think the payment on time is an issue. As I said, CFO will speak to the Ria Batala, but I understand the chairperson to be saying, and or some other members are saying, Ria Batala goes in two ways. Whilst you must pay contractors that do the work on time, we must also make sure that we get our money from departments, but that's more on the collection side. I think the chairperson gave the example of GCIS. We'll ask CFO to speak to that kind of collection and how we need to expedite those processes, but certainly there is work being done there. When we spoke about guidance to provinces, we have a legislative framework. GIAMA is one, and that will also help us with these unidentified properties. But the MINMEC forum is in fact a forum for us to provide that leadership and within those frameworks. Sometimes it's not, we don't have policies to do certain things and we're guided by the Constitution, but it's providing that kind of guidance. For instance, we have some ideas, the DDG on special projects was saying, Minister, if we can get money, why don't we put up a government precinct in Mthatha? Now, you know as well as I do, if any city needs that kind of precinct, it's Mthatha. So why don't we consider something like that? We've got land and we've got the assets. So it's about providing that kind of guidance so that we can regenerate the inner city of Mthatha. On the issue, I've spoken to one of skills and more to be done there. I've also toyed with the idea, Chairperson, of a database. I don't know what the unintended consequences of a database might be. Would we be creating unfair expectation if we created a database where people can register? But unless we have a database, how will we know who they are and where they are? So maybe those are some of the things that we could consider. If it's not going to create an unfair and expectation, I think maybe it would be an idea if we had a database of whatever skills are available. We ourselves learn from interacting with various professionals that there are even retired people that want to assist, and we work with DBSA in trying to assist those people, and Old Mutual have also come on board, and they employ those people to try and assist. Chairperson, on the issue of legislation, the bills that we have in the pipeline are the expropriation bill, and that is timed for the tabling in Parliament the first quarter in next year, 2011. That bill is currently receiving extensive attention in terms of our other counterpart in land, rural development and land reform. There's a technical team that's been set up. Legal teams have been set up to address the issues that came out of the previous round of public hearings. And that is making progress. They are due soon to give me a progress report. In fact, the two ministers concerned chair that task team, Minister Nkwinti and myself, and we're hoping that there's been sufficient progress so that we can look at finalizing that bill and then take it through the normal processes of public comments before it comes to Parliament, etc. But we're targeting the tabling of that early, in fact, at the beginning of the year next year. The Agrimore bill, work is being done on that. However, there is a rethink within Cabinet as to looking at the research and development entities that government presides over. So we need to have a discussion with the Minister of Science and Technology, because Agrimore is actually housed by SCSIR, but it comes to Public Works. And we want to discuss that with the Minister of Science and Technology to see where the best place would be for Agrimore, given that it is a quality assurance entity which already exists in some of the entities that account to the Minister of Science and Technology. Informal discussions have been held already, and we need to formalize those as soon as the Minister is available for a meeting. State land disposal, there needs to be a review of that act, and that would have to come back as early as next year, together with the expropriation bill. So those need to be reviewed, and work is continuing on the white paper, and we'd like to get that finalized as a matter of urgency. So I think that's the legislative program for this year, Chairperson. We are also guided by the priorities of Cabinet in terms of where we need to go, but that's what's in the legislative pipeline at the moment. Maybe I can ask Chairperson that some of the other points will be covered in the presentations that are coming, because there are comments and further details that can be provided by some of the managers. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister. Shall we? I could follow up that. They are good eggs. What is the problem?
Can I just, want to ask one question more? I just want to find out from the Minister, what is the procedure for promotion in his department?
Sure.
Promotion. Well, there's a Public Service Act chairperson, and we'd have to conform with that if there is to be promotion. But maybe when the DG is presented, maybe the question can be given to him. Thanks.
You know, this is a very easy but difficult question. Who do you want promoted? So that we resolve it here. It becomes a committee decision. Oh, okay.
Chair, Babu Masango can put his CV in for DG if he's looking for promotion.
Okay, but that's now called employment or deployment. Promotion is when you were there already, you want the higher one. So I was just checking if anybody here has lobbied Babu Masango for promotion, so that we can take a decision now to say yes, implement. Oh, you know, no, Babu Masango will pass this matter just to, so that we go to the relevant legislation and just check what is public service access. Acting DJ.
Honourable members, Minister, DM, colleagues. Thanks very much. We appreciate that you gave us the opportunity to present. I will cover the key government, key department branches, and then CFO will add in terms of the funding per branch and functions that the department is performing. The response to the question that has been raised, the Public Service Act no longer provides promotion, it provides appointment, which means any position in the department has to be advertised and contested. That is why it is called appointment, no longer promotion. That is the act. It has been repealed. It no longer has an opportunity for promotion. And then my area of focus will be in the program structure that has been approved by National Treasury. These are funding streams in the department, which is in the area of administration, immovable asset investment management, expanded public works program, construction and property policy regulation, auxiliary and associated programs. It is based on this funding streams that the department has got branches within which we source that funding and implement the programs of the department. The department has categorized itself into 8 branches. Being asset investment management, operations management, special projects, inner city regeneration and project management and professional services, expanded public works program, construction and property policy regulation, finance and supply chain management, corporate services. Out of these programs, branches of the department, there are activities or functions that each branch is actually implementing in line with the funding that has been assigned by National Treasury. The Asset Investment Management branch of the department is focused mainly in ensuring that the department's assets are properly managed, and then we therefore have an asset enhancement of the asset register. We do have a program wherein we compile the service level agreements with the client's department. We facilitate the implementation of user asset management plans for the departments that are actually implementing. Compilation of custodian asset management plans. We implement programs for planned maintenance and capital works and leasing, and in the leasing portfolio. We implement the GIAMA property performance standards. The energy and water efficiency is also one of the key areas that we are focused on. We also ensure that we rehabilitate the department, the government, unused or underutilized assets. And then the program for accessibility for people with disabilities is also focused in this branch. Valuations is also one of the areas that we implement in this particular area. Operations is the area where we are focusing all our regional offices. As we all know that in each province, we do have a regional presence for the National Department of Public Works, out of which those regions implement the decisions that are taken by the department. We do have also the inner city regeneration, which is a government decision that we need to revive the inner city. There are various projects that have been identified currently to look into the inner city. There is also the issue of, out of the inner city, we may mention issues of the Freedom Park Administration Building refurbishment, and also the HDD Vet Building that is in Pretoria. There is also a program of feasibility studies to identify and inform the rollout of the program to other towns. And then we ensure that we develop a center of expertise for DPW project management. This particular unit is the area where the built environment professions in the form of engineering, architects, and so forth are located. We also ensure that the embassies and major prisons are actually executed through this unit. There's also a program that looks into the dam safety monitoring, site identification and clearance for the development of projects, and the development of the green buildings and sustainable principle. As already indicated, the Dolomite also, the implementation of that program is located in this branch. We have identified the special projects as one particular branch that focuses on any other project that can be identified as special. Currently, we have the land port of entry, which are those which are major: Bolela, Skelpatek, False Drift, and Libombo, Resano. The Pan-African Parliament program, which we are implementing through National Treasury to look into the alternative funding modules. Also, the Department of International Relations and Cooperation is also involved in this one. The FIFA World Cup redevelopment of border posts is one of the issues that this branch is looking at. The expanded public health program is one of the branches in the department that is focused on ensuring that we implement the mandate of government, the 4.5 multi-year in the various sectors, namely the social, infrastructure, economic, environmental, and culture in the non-state sector, implement the incentive grants. EPWP ensures that we implement also for the first time, strategic partnership with NGOs, CBOs, and the non-profit organizations. We also implement the incentive schemes in the environment and culture and non-state sector and community works program. We also ensure that we work with the presidency. As we may all aware that the presidency did a review in late last year, out of which they came up with recommendations. We have developed an implementation strategy to ensure that we work closely with all the stakeholders and departments and also the presidency in this regard to ensure that those recommendations are taken care of. The sectors, EPWP implemented this program per sectors, as indicated on the slide there, the work opportunities and the full-time equivalents as per sector, meaning the infrastructure, environmental, social, and the non-state sector. Furthermore, the EPWP per sphere has got the targets that have been indicated per sphere, meaning local, provincial, national, and non-state sector. We've got a branch also that is looking into the policy on the construction and property. This is the area where we...
Sorry, DJ, you on the slide, on page 9, slide 18, the one on target per sphere, if you can just explain that because you just rushed through it without clarifying what you mean.
Okay. The EPWP target per sphere of government, per sphere of government per financial year up to from 2010-11 financial year, 12-13 financial year, 13-14 financial year, per sphere meaning local government will have its own, provincial government, national government, and the non-state sector, meaning the CBOs and so forth, and the total targets per fear are the categories that have been indicated on the area of totals, which means local government has got its own target area per financial year, provincial per financial year, national per financial year, non-state per financial year, and the overall target will give us a target that is all on the right hand of the slide there. So these are the targets that have been assigned per work opportunities.
But do they represent money or just figures?
Work opportunities.
Work opportunities, okay.
The policy branch, this is the area where we look into the legislation, the charters, as to whether what legislation, what charter, and which policy can better guide the department. The branch is looking into monitoring and implementing the current property and construction charters. And the National Contractor Development Program and the Contractor Incubator Program, the Property Incubator Program, and also to ensure that the GIAMA is extended to also local government. We also look into the policy development in the area of asset management and related in the department. Expropriation is one of the acts that I think we will want to look at. The state land under the custodianship of the department and the Land Affairs Board. We work very closely with the Department of Rural and Land Affairs in this regard. The finance and supply chain management is the area wherein the funding of the department is managed and ensure that they guide us in terms of the procurement discipline of the department. They support the department in all the areas that relates to funding and also ensure that we comply with the necessary supply chain management issues. This area also look into the fact that we need to comply with the GAAP and then also ensure that we collect revenue and then we collaborate with our debtors, ensure that we manage the receiving of the debt. We also improve the internal controls in terms of the payment of invoices. The 30 days is still a policy that we implement. We will also ensure that we improve the supply chain management overall of the department. We also improve the management of movable assets. The corporate services is also a branch that ensures that it supports the department in relation to the programs, processes, and then the resourcing in terms of the IT, the human resources, and related functions. This is also the area that looks into ensuring that where we lack in terms of capacity, we need to develop programs that ensure that we capacitate the department. The skills development program is also in this particular area. And the legal aspects are also managed in this particular area. The strategic management unit is intended to ensure that it strengthens the department to respond accordingly to the mandate of the government and country at large and ensure that our strategic plan is focused on the mandates of government and also the outcome-based programs as initiated from the presidency. We also have a unit that ensures that we monitor on a regular basis what the programs that we promised that we'll have to implement. The intergovernmental relations ensure that we relate well with all the partners that work with the department. The entities that report to the department are IDT, the CIDB and the CBE, and the AGRIMA, as already Minister has indicated, there's a process that is looking into this particular area. All that I have said in terms of the activities that have been managed by per branch, the CFO will be able to give the financials as to which aspects are funded, which ones are not funded. Thanks very much, Shepherd.
Okay.
You can't be left on questions. Okay. If you don't have questions, you may comment, comrade. Just briefly. We'll come to the overall discussion. But if there are any issues that you want just to raise, to highlight, to comment on, let's give the DG that honor. We come to the rents and cents now, to the money part of it. Bomasa.
While the minister is here, let me just want to comment. I don't know whether he's going to deliver freely.
He's here.
Yeah, no, I don't know whether he wants to promote. Minister, I fully agree with you. Now, I've been looking at the ASA, Agrimos South Africa, all along with their strategic plan, with their budget, and one couldn't understand why are they with this department? What is their role? And now you came with that. But the other one that I just want to bring to your attention, CIDB. I'm still not convinced with CIDB. What is it doing? Because people register with CIDB, they sit there, and I don't know what CIDB actually does with all those people that are registered there to improve them. And the other thing, CIDB doesn't even have a tooth. People can tender with anyone, even if they are not registered with CIDB, nothing happens. So I can't understand what is CIDB doing actually. Do we really need CIDB, or can we live with NHBRC as the same as CIDB? Those are the things that have been worrying me with these two departments. But thanks, we have spoken about ACRIMO, which we had a problem, all of us, when we started with ACRIMO. Yeah, it was just questions after questions, and they couldn't answer us because we couldn't understand. CSIR is there, and they are also there. All their money, I mean, more than 50% of their salary goes to, I mean, all their budget goes to CSIR as personal, or let me talk about salary. It's like salary, but it's going to another department. But thanks for that. I just want to hear your comment on CIDB.
Thank you, Bob Masangu. Anybody else? Kaila?
Chairperson, if I'm out of order, rule me out of order.
You're out of order, sir.
Thank you.
No, please go ahead.
About CITP, Minister. On the board of CITP, the established contractors are represented, but not the emerging contractors. One is worried about it because if you look at the emerging contractors, they remain emerging. And fortunately, I was involved when CITP was set up. It was to improve the emerging contractors, but they are not being improved. So when you appoint a new board, please look into that. That is a big error that the emerging sector is not represented here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Babu Guni. And then we'll take Brad Denny that side.
No, thank you, Chair. The key branch initiative, construction and property policy regulation branch. You know, I wanted to ask the acting DG about this property incubator program. I don't understand it. Incubation, well, in my simple understanding, is the
hatching.
Yeah, hatching at the level of initiation stage. Now, when you incubate the property that is existing, I don't know, maybe it's English, you know, which I'm still learning to understand.
Yeah.
But further than that, the issue of a CIDB, I also wanted to add my voice on it. The people that actually CIDB targets, it's people who are in the EPWP. There you are coerced that you must comply. Like Mr. Masango said, that actually its existence, it's more like gatekeeping. You have your emerging contractor who must now you know, climb the stairs and go up, it's going to be very impossible because he is told that he's at the grade one. You know, people are kept at the grade one. Until when? Until when? But if you are in the EPWP, you are compelled to comply. So I'm also of the view that their existence is more like security. And allow others to go in. Others must not go up.
Thank you very much. Brad Daniel will be the last one. Oh, there are others. I thought you have perfume like it. Oh, then Roma Dala.
On the issue of procedures for promotion and so on that you responded to, I just want to understand it further. Is it only for people, the act that you spoke about, that all posts have to be advertised and appointed? Is it for people on contract, in other words, executive people are on top there, or would it extend even to lower people? I know that in the past, if there was promotion, there was some act that said you consider people inside the company, people inside the constitution before you go out as a priority. I think that was pushed by Labour. Well, it didn't merit a delivery, but I just want to check if there's a secretary, don't you consider junior secretaries within, or does it apply across the board? Or is it only for top people who are on contract, like 5-year contract?
Thank you very much, Bradeni. Mohammed Lala?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, my question, in fact, I need a clarity on this property policy regulations, because it is said that the extension of Giyama principles will be extended to local government. Can the department tell us or brief us whether the property, which is internationally, what is going to happen about it? Because I haven't heard them mentioning anything about the property internationally. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I'm going to give to the department, but maybe to just take it further. 2 points, just to take the 2 points further. Let me start with the last one. The protocols about the property that is outside of the country. What is the protocol with international relations or whatever? So that at least we understand. If you say you're building an embassy in Nigeria, for instance, and whatever else, what are the protocols in terms of registration, blah, 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 blah? And what do we have? Do we know what we have? Because I know that inside the country we're still battling to know what we have. We know our liabilities, but our assets are still evading us. So that's one matter. And then the other one relates to, I think, AFA, it's one matter that we have to come to. We've been worried that, you know, there is a baby that is being looked after by CSIR. But we wanted to engage CSIR, AFA, and SABS to say, listen, tell us what you do, who does what, so that we don't have all these fragmentations that are taking place. So that's one matter that we want to say. But let me say the following. We have met prior to this, before the actual changing of the strategy to what it is today. We have met with CIDP. We have raised our concerns with CIDP. So I'm not suggesting that you answer all the problems of the CIDP. We are unhappy with the way they are dealing with certain issues. We have raised it with them, so it's not just a matter that you're raising for the first time here. We've met with the IDT, and we've actually said that the IDT has shown professionalism and they need to be supported. Particularly their financials have been, they've made us proud as Parliament here. We have said they must go to the department and assist you, they must go to CIDB and assist you, they must go to CBE, they must go to all those who are misbehaving. You see, and try and say this is the way we do it as a model. That's why we are going to be behind them. In our BRRR report that we are going to send as Parliament, we are going to insist that the IDT be funded. So we have already told them that we are going to support you. We want to support all of you and the department as well. You see, Parliament has passed legislation that can throttle you if we want to be funny. But we're not a funny bunch of people here. We want to ensure that you succeed in what you do. That's why we were able to say, when you gave us this set plan that was having some loopholes and leaks and all that, we said, we are happy that you took it back, because it was going to be embarrassing for us to be proud of your department. What you brought here, I can say we started to be proud of you. Keep it up. You can't go back now. All right? So that's the one thing. We still have to meet APRIMO and CPE. So the other issues are still outstanding, and I'll make the announcements later in terms of what we're going to be doing as we meet them. Lastly, if you say extension of Giyama principles, in quotation marks, to local government, what does that mean? Because we've got legislation. Does it imply amending the legislation, or are you not that brave? Do you just want to do a Mickey Mouse thing, you know, in quotes, or what is the position here? So,
Chairperson, thanks very much. I think we are now dealing with the details. I will suggest colleagues should respond to issues. Lydia is going to deal with the Giyama and the property incubator. Sasa will deal with the issues of properties that are in foreign countries. And then Lucky will deal with the appointments processes. Thanks.
Can we ask the chairperson, with your permission, DDG Special Projects to speak on some of the CIDB, issues? I know you've dealt directly with CIDB, but he represents Public Works on the board of CIDB. So there might be some issues you want to just share.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Members. Maybe the issue is the name in terms of the property incubator, but basically what the project seeks to do is to bring black people into the property market. We know that that's a market that has got, that is very difficult for black people to penetrate. So what we did when we started the program was to get them, call for people to express an interest, get them into a database. The program, since we are finalizing, it will be approved, they're finally approved by the minister or make some changes. But we seek to give them not only opportunities. What happens sometimes with these programs is that we give people opportunities and they find it difficult to manage, especially if we are talking about property. So we look at all or most of the property activities, whether it's property ownership, facilities management, property management, broking services. But what we do over and above that is that we are discussing, almost finalizing discussions with an institution, a well-known university, to develop a program for them. 3-year program, that means when you get out of that program, you will not only have received an opportunity in a competitive environment anyway, you will not have only have received an opportunity, but you will get property skills, you will get out with a certificate. Over and above that, we are mobilizing banks to support the program, because you find that when black people go to the banks looking for finance, their transactions will be looked at depending on whether you are known in the property market. If you are not known, the risk is high and it becomes difficult for you. So basically that program is looking at that. It's a 3-year program. Hopefully after 3 years, people will be sustainable and be able to participate in the property market independently.
Just before you get away from that, which university? We've got a new university called the Communist University. Why do you keep it secret?
It's that university. Oh. And a well-known professor, Professor Veroli. We are finalizing that program. Hopefully, it's going to be a very good program that everybody in the property market will actually respect, because Professor Veroli and that university are well-known institutions.
Maybe before you run away, we might have to come back to this matter. You know, so that we don't leave an impression that for black people to participate in the property market, they must go to university for 3 years, a program here first, before they can participate. So that we don't seem to be creating an impression that we're creating a qualification for blacks to participate in the property market, a 3-year waiting period, and then you can consider that. I don't want to have that impression. I'm sure that's not what you intended to do.
Yes.
but you're tending to say that we need to empower people who are already in the property market to have certain whatever.
Yes, okay. I hope that's not the impression.
Okay.
What we're trying to do is to get people even that have not been in the property market. And sometimes what happens is that people that have been in the property market, they will have qualified themselves in a specific area, let's say, for instance, valuation or broking services. We are saying when we have participated in this program, you must get out of the program very complete and be able to run your own company. For instance, we've got property economics, property law, property management, the whole set. Obviously, if people have already got qualifications and they can stand on their own, it's well and good. But for those that need certain areas or that need training altogether, we're avoiding a situation possibly of fronting. Because when people are confronted with transactions and they don't know how to market, the next best thing they are going to do is to sell that tender. So we're saying you should not need to get involved in, because you know how to manage your business technically and financially. On the extension of Kiama, the honorable members will remember that when government, especially driven by National Treasury, started the process of developing PSMA, it was almost impossible to do PSMA including local government, because the structures of local government, they are totally, the government itself, they are totally, totally different. Let me make an example of the immovable asset management or ownership at national and at local level. At national, you've got clear delineation of a custodian. You've got a clear delineation of a user. And therefore, when you set the principles for a user and the functions for a user at national, they will be different to local government. Local government is different altogether. You will find that the user and the custodian, they are the same. So it's difficult to set a framework across the sphere. What National Treasury, for instance, when they were confronted with that challenge, was that they developed Municipal Financial Management Act. It's the same, they extended the principles to local government. So what we are seeing, and we've discussed this COCTA now, but we started with local government before. What we're saying is that the same principles as you extend using their legislative framework, we are not looking at establishing a legislation. We are using their existing frameworks, but within those, for instance, the Municipal Systems Act and the MFMA, we use within those in terms of asset management all the principles that we want that we have in Kiama, like life cycle management, acquisition, the same guidelines. They will be doing it. And because these acts that we are looking at amending, they are managed by, or the custodian of those acts is the Minister of Local Government. Obviously, our role is really to help them, give them framework, but to roll out to each and every municipality. It is not the responsibility of the minister. It is the responsibility of the Minister of Local Government. Our role is to make sure that the same principles apply, even though the acts that are governing those principles, they are different. So that's what we are doing with local government.
Go to the next one, but I think it's important that just to let you know, before we get some further comments on this matter, that this committee doesn't agree with you, okay, on this matter, to say there are difficulties, this minister is responsible for this and so on. There is a process that has gone on in this legislation which was outstanding to local government. The issues that the committee has raised as a concern is just to say government assets is one government. You see, you can't have them half, even if it's difficult at local government level. There's, you know, there are very serious discomfort about how government property at local government is underutilized, looted, and so on and so on and so on. So that matter is going to come back very sharply. I think I must just warn you. Minister, I'm sure you've got the message. There was somebody raising a hand. Oh, Deputy Minister, sorry. How can I miss you?
I actually, Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity you said. I wanted to just remind members that actually when the GIAMA Act was passed itself in the department, we're fully aware that that was some of the conditions Parliament put in the debate around the amendment. So we actually noting the committee's concerns, and we will be working very hard to address them.
DG, you know. Yeah. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm responding to the foreign affairs assets, foreign assets. In 1999, the custodial responsibility, which includes planning, construction, maintenance, and management, the function for these aspects have been devolved to the Department of Foreign Affairs. The Department of Public Works, we are still responsible as the overall custodian. We remain overall custodian, but the function is devolved to Foreign Affairs. So we're still responsible for the disposal aspect for foreign properties. There is an asset register that is in place that is managed by Department of Foreign Affairs and it is shared with Department of Public Works. I have circulated that asset register for foreign affairs recently. I can also circulate it through to this committee. In terms of the process, process for construction of new work, maintenance and management, it's a similar process like DPW in that the Department of Foreign Affairs requires to work within the MTF framework where they have to plan and prioritize their requirements across the various countries, the various embassies, commissions, etc. And based on the funding received, they prioritize the requirements. What actually happens is that the scope and specification is drafted by the embassy. They appoint assistants in this regard. And they cost it and submit this to the DECO Department of Foreign Affairs Department, and this gets prioritized across their implementation program. And if funded, this gets executed in the particular country. But the contractors, etc., is utilized. There is a tender process that actually happens in the relevant country. And the contractors, et cetera, appointed from the country in question. However, if there's a need for, there are exceptions, if there is problems relevant to contractors that are not available, for example, in the DRC, in the case of war, et cetera, then contractors are flown in from South Africa, materials, et cetera. So there are exceptional cases in this regard. So the process that is followed is pretty much like South Africa.
Thank you very much. We're going to take the next one, but my boss here next to me has taken note that you circulate some registers for international. If we can, I'm just not sure about the security of those assets. You see, if you've got a register like that available in the public domain. You know, there are people who are gunning for the Zimbabwean property in South Africa. So we must just be also aware that if such register becomes available, if South Africa misbehaves, you know, people might just attach those property outside. Okay.
I may comment as well. The process relevant to disposals that we manage, DPW manage, it goes out on tender. There's a tender process as well. Actually, we're in the process of disposing a few foreign properties, so those that are interested may tender.
Okay.
I'm just worried the way you are busy disposing. You know, we've got some generations coming, you see. So the Foreign Affairs or Department of International Relations is looking after the assets in terms of whatever protocols that we still want to engage. Because when we met with them, this matter was still about hazy in terms of what they should be doing. This matter is not as cut and dry as you present it now here today. So we need to engage that matter and just ensure that we've got a clearer picture. But if, for instance, your focus is disposal, you see, I don't know why are you so in a hurry to dispose, you see, before we know what we have, and so on and so on. So don't focus too much on disposal. Let's ensure that we know what we have before we dispose. You wanted to speak on CIDB.
That's correct, Chair. Thanks, Chair. Just few points on CIDB. Chairperson, one of the key outcome which came in terms of analyzing the trends in the construction market or construction industry in South Africa is that as a result of the investment by government of about 954 billion rands on infrastructure investment, there has been an intensification of a number of contractors flocking the construction industry. Of course, with expectations that people will be able to access job opportunities correctly so. This is the reason why about 60% of the CIDB registry basically consists of construction companies that are registered under Grade A or Grade 1. CIDB, in terms of the Act, Chair, is the regulator of the construction industry in the public sector.
Raman, I want you to take that space and use it properly, I mean, to the best of your ability. But I think if you just try and address the issue that members are raising without telling us about the CIDB, because we've had that, just to say that, listen, on this issue of gatekeeping, that is a specific question, and the CIDB, the unhappiness that you get from members, are there issues to address that matter? That's what we're interested in. We didn't want to get into the issues that we have already gotten into. And can I just warn that after you've spoken, we're going to take a 5 minutes break. Just to stretch. So be mindful that the longer you speak, the more you keep us here, those who are pressed.
But Honorable Chair, this makes my job very easy. I will then deal with two issues, which is called gatekeeping and so forth. Chair, it's important that when contractors register with CIDB, they register with a particular grade. The reason why you've got to do that is to ensure that you address the matter of quality in the construction industry. I'll give you one example. In Limpopo, about 22 schools were decommissioned last year, simply because a particular contractor that was appointed basically could not perform the actual work. So it is important that the only new thing that currently at the board of CIDB we're doing now is that in terms of the CIDB regulation, you've got to have in your employ a qualified and professionally registered person. That's one of the regulations, which means you need to have an artisan. Otherwise, automatically we are excluded. You need to have an artisan, a project manager, and so forth. The question that arises is what happened to an emerging contractor who does not have a job opportunity or a tender from state for 3 to 4 years and is unable to pay those professionals in their employ? It means that to the extent that that contractor does not have job opportunities from the state for 5 years, is unable to pay those professionals in his company, and therefore, because of that, he can't access job opportunities from the state. So one of the thinking that we're doing now in the CIDB is that we need to review that particular regulation. You can actually say the person at the time of contesting for job opportunities does not necessarily have to have in his or her employ a professionally registered person. But at the time when you award that particular tender and before execution, that particular contractor may actually procure the services of a professionally registered person. So that you don't penalize an emerging contractor that he must have in his or her employ a professionally registered person, and because he does not have job opportunities, you then penalize him by not actually accessing state tender. This is one regulation that will be pushing through the Department of Public Works, and eventually it will have to go to the CIDB board so as to create more space for the participation of the emerging contractors in the construction industry. The second and the last point I'd like to make, one of the regulations in the CIDB is that you need to have a particular percentage of your annual turnover to justify why you're contesting for a particular tender, i.e., if your tender is the one that you're contesting is about an X or 10 million, you need 10% as a turnover to justify why you do that. And the question again is, what happened to an emerging contractor that does not have a job opportunity for 3 to 4 years? It means that person would not have accumulated enough capital to sustain himself or herself as a contractor, thus contesting many positions. So the question is, to what extent do you want to either maintain and or alternatively decrease the threshold that currently you require in order to contest for tender? And those are some of the regulations that through the Department of Public Works will be proposing that they must be amended so as to open more space in terms of participation of black contractors in the construction industry. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Ramad. I think that's quite useful because we have not been understanding why people are kept outside. We're not informed about some of the regulations that are an impediment to that type of thing. Honorable members, let's take a 10-minute break. We come back. The next time we come into whatever outstanding matters here and then go straight to the money, the figure. Just to be reminded that we are meeting the CBE and AGRIMO on Friday. This Friday. Our program was thinking that we are going to have a committee, Parliament was going to be sitting next week. So we are told that because of the holiday on Tuesday, it's going to be constituency week. We want to do AGRIMO and CBE before we debate. The only time available is this coming Friday. Sorry? We've got a special arrangement to sit in the morning. So which means we will not be part of that EPC unless otherwise decided. We will get further instructions. But tomorrow at 9:30, those who are available, you're invited to go and observe the appropriations that are going to be taken, particularly with the underspending by municipalities, EPWP, National Treasury, COCTA, and so on, Department of Public Works in general. Appropriations has invited us to participate. I'm not sure what the venue is, but I'm sure if you look into that, you can just find out what the venue is for us, so that we can. Our meeting on Friday is on S26, NCOP Wing, at 9:30. Are we ready? Are we all here? Okay. Those who came earlier, who stuck to the 10-minute rule, were given some sweets. Those who came late did not get extra drops. So that's the... yeah, no. No incentive bonuses if you do not do your way. Lucky?
Thanks, Chairperson. This is in response to the question by the Honourable Member, Denike Gana, regarding the Public Service Act and its application. And I think in his question, he partly gave the answer to say, does it apply only to top management or does it cover everybody? And the answer is that it applies to everybody, especially in our case, across the levels, including contract workers. In cases of vacancies, the post will be publicly advertised, be it internally or externally. And I think the principle is to promote both fairness and transparency. Thank you.
You can either advertise internally or externally, or you're doing it both. What is the criteria? How do you handle that?
Yes. I just wanted to ask the chairperson that Mocha Dibana is correct. You can do either of or you can do both. But if you would remember, the same act that was passed by the House in terms of the Employment Equity Act also does allow, over and above the Public Service Act, allows departments. It would also strongly apply to public works where they need to allocate specific posts in terms of what they would call ring fencing for women or black men if we run short or disabled people. The same public service in terms of also the department of allows you not to advertise. You do have those provisions where a particular position based on the inherent requirements of the job, but also based on meeting your target in terms of your employment equity plan, you are allowed to hit hand. So I just wanted to add that to say, in the Department of Public Works, we apply all the different measures legal into the different areas informed by our current employment equity targets that we are required to meet. In respect to the different vulnerable sectors. So we would and we do need to look into the relations in terms of the Employment Equity Act. So we use both, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Lucky, are you done? You're done. Okay, thank you very much. The reason why we're raising this, we just wanted to understand because generally there are a lot of vacancies in the public sector. Okay? And we have not even come to you to see how do you look like, okay? We have not even touched that. You know that it's a sore point. We tend to be nice to you today. You see, because you're so nice, you brought us a very nice... so we also try to be polite, didn't we, you know? Reciprocity, yeah, something like that. We try to do that. So we're not touching all these other sore points today. Yeah, we try to be nice. But thank you very much. I think that's basically where we what our worry is to say, what is the holdup? And so on. But thank you, DG, according to your instruction, that's the lot. Okay. Let's talk money.
Thank you.
Not now. Just write it down when you come back.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson, members, Minister, Deputy Minister, and colleagues. Yes, indeed, after all has been said, we have to balance the books and ensure that we can deliver on our mandate. The slide there shows us the allocation for 2009-10. Basically, the 6.5, the 8.1, and the 8.4 that is on the slide there is the allocation that was given to us during the 2009 MTEF. So we are showing how we have received additional funding and what has been taken from us and what is the new baseline going forward. 2010-11, according to the 2009-10 allocation, we were given for 6.5 billion and we were given additional funds amounting to 40 million. But then subsequently, the amounts were reduced. One just through efficiency savings and the shifting of funds to COCTA for the Community Works Program, which amounted to 249 million, and we received additional funds for incentives to provinces of 56 million, and that brought us to a new baseline of 6.4 billion for the new MT for the new financial year of 2010-11. This is how the breakdown of the 249 is made up of. Efficiency savings, this is a reduction on our goods and services budget. Therefore, what it means is that if you look at under adjustments there for the MTEF, the goods and services budget has been reduced by 59 million, 65 million, 93 in the outer year. And the below the line there, those are transfers that we are putting through to COCTA for the Community Works Program. This is the budget per economic classification for the entire department. For 2009-10, I just brought that one so that we can see the gap between what we have currently and going forward, the 6 billion, that's what we have now. But then for the new year, we have 6.4 billion made up of 1.1 billion under compensation of employees, goods and services, 570 million, office accommodation, that is the space occupied by public works, 351 million, transfers and subsidies, 3 billion. I've tried to give just the key drivers of the 3 billion in the blue block under transfers and subsidies on the screen. EPWP accounts for 1.1 billion just for the provincial and local incentives. For property rates, in that amount, there is 1.9 billion. Capital infrastructure, back on the table, 1.3 billion is the capital infrastructure that we use as a department on our buildings, and payments for capital assets is for our movable assets in the department, which will be furniture, IT, and all the equipment, bringing us to a total budget of 6.4 for the financial year 2010-11. What I've also included in that slide is just to show the discrepancy between our current and capital budget. If you look at the 6.4 billion and you look at what drives implementation, clearly there is a disjuncture there. The compensation budget versus the total budget is 16, almost 17%. The norm in the industry would be around 20, 25%. We normally say the current budget should not exceed 30%. And when you look at compensation of employees, there we are sitting on 17, and it actually goes down in the outer year. And clearly, what has come out from our calculations is that we don't have money for the implementation of the OSD. And that on its own is going to create a lot of unhappiness. Goods and services budget is also decreasing. It has been decreasing significantly throughout the years, and that is the budget that we need to manage the project to make sure that we have enough money to get the expertise that is needed in the nature of our business. This is the budget program one.
Just to clarify this one before you, so that when we return to it for discussion, it's clear. You say compensation of employees, the norm in the industry is about 20%.
Yes, 20-25.
And you are at 17%.
17%.
What is the reason for that? Is it...
We haven't been receiving any additional funding on all the requests that we submitted to Treasury. There has never been additional funding allocated for recruitment. In fact, what we've been doing is just reprioritizing, taking money away from goods and services and through the cost-saving mechanisms and then increasing the compensation line.
And also, we come back to discuss this. You're bemoaning the reduction in goods and services, but you're also budgeting for savings in goods and services. So if you're saying the money is not enough, but you still remain with some money for that, what do you mean? And secondly, for 20 goods and services, if you look into the coming years, it's actually increasing, but you're saying that it's decreasing. I'm not sure whether I understand what you mean.
Yeah. If you look at 2010-11,
yeah.
570,
yes.
It increases only in 2011-2012. But what happens is because the budgets are reviewed annually, that 724 is also going to get cut, and it's going to reduce the... That doesn't mean because we have allocated the 724 million, that's what we are going to get. And that is why we call the budget in the outer year indicative, because every time we come to the E&E, they get reduced. The previous slide, I showed the reduction that happened of 59 million. So even the coming outer years, it will still be reduced.
You're calling it efficiency savings?
Efficiency savings, yes.
But if you say you save the money, in other words, you didn't use the money, and they take it, you say it's a reduction.
That is done by National Treasury. They call it efficiency savings. They reduce the goods and services budgets to force departments to become even more efficient. That is why it's called efficiency savings.
All right, we'll discuss some of the matters going forward.
This is the budget per program. Program one. We have 663 million allocated for the year under review. Immovable asset management, our program 2, 4.2 billion. that is the core business, which includes the capital budgets and the property rates. Program 3, EPWP, we have an allocation of 1.4 billion. Program 4, Property and Construction Industry Policy Regulation, they have an allocation of 31.5 million. Program 5, Auxiliary and Associated Services 21, which brings us to the 6.4 billion that we have as a department. These are the earmarked funds. We have office accommodation for the properties that we are occupying. We cannot use this money for any other purpose unless we get permission from National Treasury. We have EPWP with 278, infrastructure, that's the 1.3 billion, CIDB, we transfer 63 million to them on annually, CBE, 25 million. We have energy efficiency, 75 million, which is also not adequate in terms of the energy efficiency that has to be done on all our buildings throughout the country. The non-state sector that relates to the EPWP, 179 million, which goes to IDT. We have 10 million, which goes to the IDT on EPWP. And the two are incentives to local government and provincial, which is 622, those are the incentive grants, and the 387, which makes up that 1 billion I spoke about earlier. And then we have the devolution of property rates, which is also a billion.
Just on the same matter, program 3 EPWP, then you've got a figure of 1.4 billion. That is on slide 29. On slide 28, you're giving us 1 billion.
The 1.4 includes the unit itself. That's the total amount that the program has got, including its own current budget. It will be the incentive and the current budget in under program 4.
What does it add to?
To 1.4. If we go back to the other slide, yeah, these are just the earmarked funds, not the total budget. The total budget for EPWP is 1.4. The 1 billion that I showed earlier is just the transfer to local and provincial.
Okay. All right.
This is just the breakdown of the conditional grants and specifically an exclusive appropriation. This is a new term used by National Treasury where they want to emphasize the point that you can't do anything with this money. If you can't spend, you can't even reprioritize and allocate it somewhere else. It actually relates to those conditional grants that I spoke to about earlier on, and the energy efficiency and the transfers that go to IDT. These are the amounts that if we can't spend, there's nothing that we can do within the department. This is the breakdown of the infrastructure budget, the 1.3 billion that is managed by the allocated to the department. We have a departmental 93 million. It includes the building of one of our offices in Bloemfontein. Accessibility 15 million. This is allocated to making sure that our buildings are accessible. Dolomite risk management. We've allocated 160 million. The breakdown will come on the next slide. Then port of entry, we've allocated 551 million. We have the prestige unit that we've allocated 283 million. The inner city regeneration also allocated 200 million, which makes up our total 1.3 billion under capital infrastructure. If you look at the slide here, basically what we've tried to do is to unpack the allocations. We have the information explained more in detail in the strategic plan. I think it's under page 90. Skilpadsek, we've allocated 278. Golela, 43.7 million. Lebombo, 42. Fuel stripped, 3 million. We have the REM projects that are running, 94 to round it off, 95 million. And there are other land ports of entry that are also in the business plans, which have been allocated to the budget of 88 million. That gives us the breakdown of the 551 million. The next one is our Dolomite risk management. Correctional services, we've allocated 4.6. For defense, 66.7 million.
Justice, 6.6 million, and for police, it's 82 million. That gives the 160. We have also included a slide on the PMTE. Perhaps I should just explain that the 5.3 billion that you see there, it's the revenue that we recover from doing work for our client departments. And this is the entity that the minister spoke about earlier in his overview on this entity that we are in the process of making sure that it is fully implemented in the department. If you look at 2009-10, let me go to 2010-11, we are budgeting to receive revenue amounting to 5.9 billion. This revenue is going to be made up of accommodation charges. That is the buildings that are owned by the department or that we lease out to client departments as a custodian. There we are projecting to receive a revenue of 2.9 million. Private leases, that is the leases that we enter into on behalf of our clients with private landlords amounting to 2.3 billion, which makes up about 40% of the total 5.9 billion that we have there. The augmentation is the money that we received from National Treasury that it was aimed at assisting us in implementing the PMTE, but the bulk of it goes to the rehabilitation of our buildings. Management fees, this is 98 million. This is the money that we received from managing the municipal services charges for our client departments. We charge 5% for managing the payments of water and lights to the municipalities. And other, it's the revenue that we generate from interest from the money that we receive. Based on these projections, then we've allocated the projected revenue as follows. We have cleaning and gardening that we do for Justice Department. That is the biggest one where we provide those services. We've allocated 155 million. Our day-to-day maintenance of buildings, we use that revenue to, we've allocated 602 million for the day-to-day maintenance of our buildings. Private leases, it's the same because we are not getting any additional money from our client departments. It's more like a free service. Whatever we agree with the landlord, that's what the client will also pay. Therefore, we wouldn't have anything different than the expenditure. Property rates, this is for the buildings that we are the custodian of as public works. And we also assist the provinces where they have arrears on their property rates prior to 2006-2007. That's where we normally come in and assist with the property rates. Repair, renovation, and upgrading. This is the 2.3 billion that we have put aside to make sure that we rehabilitate our buildings. And clearly, if we can be able to rehabilitate more of our buildings and be able to put client departments into state departments, we will obviously reduce on that private leases because that 40% obviously goes to private landlords. I think that is a balance that we'll try to strike as a department. We've also included the breakdown of client infrastructure budget. Basically, this is the capital budget that has been allocated to the client department. We administer this budget in the sense that we do work on behalf of the clients. This is 2.4 billion, which the client departments have already signed with us in relation to the projects that we are managing on their behalf. Therefore, all in all, if you look at the total budget managed by the department, when you look at the appropriation, you will see the 6.4 billion because that is what has been appropriated. But we manage almost 8 billion if you look at this 2.4 billion that is sitting with clients but managed by the department. And when we worked out the compensation line, we did not even include the fact that that 16.3 and the 17, the average of 17% does not talk to the 2.4 billion that we still have to manage as a department. And these are some of the gaps that are becoming even more conspicuous as we do our work, because we can clearly see the shortage in terms of professional skills and expertise and the systems that we must implement as a department to be able to become efficient and provide the service delivery that is so critical at this stage.
Thank you very much. Now is the time for you members to engage. This is your time. My sister, let's take your management fee. That is the management fee that you charge local government. I'm trying to understand the connection. Who do you charge the management fee to and on behalf of who?
The management fee that we charge is just relating to the municipal services for the client departments, the national departments that we service. Those are the only ones who we charge the 5% from.
What happens in practice? Let me tell you where I'm getting to. Government is owing local government a lot of money. I want to see that. That's where I'm getting to. It's a leading question. That's what I'm trying to understand. You charge management fee to the client department for municipal services.
On their behalf. What happens is that with the devolution of the budget,
yeah,
under property rates and municipal services, some of the client departments opted not to devolve the budget. They requested Public Works to continue managing those bills on their behalf. So we would receive a bill on behalf of a client department, pay the municipal, and the client, and then we'll invoice the client department, including the 5% for administering that service on their behalf.
Do you owe municipalities?
As national, we'll owe municipalities if we don't pay our property rates. That's the only time we'll owe. But at this stage, we don't have that indication that we owe municipalities on property rates.
What do you owe them on?
We don't owe municipalities.
Are you sure?
I haven't received any complaints from them, even through my reapatala, no municipalities.
Okay, members, this is yours. Bradeni, you are the first one. Boba Sango, you are the second one. You must raise hands. If I don't see hands, I'm not calling your name. Bao Manana, you are the third. Madlala, the third. The fourth. In that order. Bradeni, Kubekaba.
Chair, I could have missed it, but back to the issue of skills, I didn't hear exactly how much we spend in terms of training the SCAD skills. And Chair, you'll be surprised that I'm emphasizing this point. You know that Africa, backwardness, one of the areas is skills, which were deprived by colonization. Blacks were not allowed to be engineers. And I can tell you, Africa is a lovely stock. You are backward, you are this and that. I mean, people deny us the right to develop and after turn around and laugh at us. So it is very important that we develop our own engineers, our own capacity, and we can't until we invest in this area. I didn't hear exactly how much we're doing and whether that is enough. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Matango?
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, let me start with the follow-up question that I was the Mandla answered, which I still feel I have to emphasize it, the CIDB issue. You know, we are worried about people who are registered with CIDB for not the performing quality job on schools. But my concern that I did raise is, what about those who are out? What about the bridges, the roads that of Malema's engineers that are not in the CIDB? It's quite on that. That's my biggest problem with CIDB, because I said it doesn't have to. Those who are out, we don't worry about their quality. Those who are in, we worry about the quality. We have to be uniform. We have to be consistent. If we clash everybody, whether it's in or it's out, he must do the quality. And the other thing that I'm just a little bit worried also is about the quality. To me, the finances, to say a guy, he has earned so much money this year, then he can go up to a certain group. I'm not sure whether does it means quality when your finances are a little bit higher, then you can build a quality, you can do a quality job. That's what I wanted to say. And then with coming to the acting DG, I just want to know on the allocation. You know, we got this social, non-sector, on-job opportunities. What really informs us to say Okay, the non-sector we can think of so many job opportunities. The social, we can think of so many jobs. Somewhere it, there must be something that informs us to say, we allocate so much to local government, we allocate so much to provincial, we allocate so much to national. What really informs us to come to those job opportunities, the number of job opportunities that we talk about? And then coming to the finances. So forgive me, Chair.
No, I forgive you.
I have to pay.
I also forgive you to come in with an opportunistic sniping comment on Malema. I forgive you on his behalf because he's not here.
No, thanks, Jeff. The company is not Malema, but it's a company.
There is no Malema company. You must substantiate your issues. Otherwise, you will call Malema to go for you. We'll call him here to come and respond.
I know he goes for everyone.
Yeah, no, so pass on.
Chairperson, on the budget pay economic.
Yeah.
You know, I've been adding just my small arithmetic on 2010-2011.
Give us a page number and a set number.
Mine is page 14 according to this slide of mine.
Yeah.
But it's budget pay economic.
Slide 28 or 27?
No, mine is page 14.
Yeah, page 14, the slide is 27 and 28.
Okay. I don't know what is the slide. I don't. Is it?
28,
okay. Yeah, it's 28. I didn't see this 28. If you add down there, just that 5, I don't get the 5, I get the 3. So they must just do some calculations there.
Where are you?
Because it's just my arithmetic. 2 plus 2 is 4, plus 7 is 11, plus 5 is 16, plus 7 is 23.
Where are you? What are you calculating?
On 2010-11, if you look at the... If you add those things up to the total, just the third unit, it gives me 3, not the 20, not the 5.
I know that, I suspect that your arithmetic is not perfect. But just take us through what you...
Let me to tell you, Chairperson, on 2010 and 2011, composition of employees.
Yes.
You see the last digit is 2.
Yes.
And goods and services, the last digit is 2, which gives you 4.
Yeah.
Office and accommodation, the last digit is 7, it gives you 11.
Yeah.
And then there is 0. You don't have to add. And then capital and infrastructure, the last digit is 5, it gives you 16.
Yeah.
And the last digit is 7, it gives you 23.
Okay. Okay. No.
You see, my arithmetic is so good.
It gives you 23.
Yeah. Chairperson, is not an serious issue. I just say they must just go and do their calculation. But
rounding off is not done this haphazardly. There is a method to doing rounding off, you see. Don't take shortcut. Sorry? No, it's just a matter that is...
No, there may be some who are also not right. Now, I've just added the last unit. I didn't do all of them.
Okay, No, you're doing very well, Balmasan.
Yeah.
I trust your
method. Yeah. Okay. I just want to find out on slide number 35, PMTE, revenue and budget. I see the revenue, these are the 2009 and 2010... It seems they are all budgets, actually. I'm worried, why don't we have the actual so that we can see what was the actual, so that, we're moving, adding, but we don't know really the actual. Did we make this in 2009 and 2010? What did we receive? Because we are comparing the budget that we are thinking of with another year, but we don't have the actual to can see. Okay, for... This year, this was what we really received, rather than just carry on budgeting on something that we don't have the actual. Maybe somewhere they must bring us the actual so that we can see what are the actual. The previous year.
But we are coming to that when they...
Are they coming?
It will come later.
Okay, no, fine.
We can do the comparison.
I was just worried about. But again, on the private lease, is this... I just want clarity. Is this the property that we are leasing from private companies so that the person can understand where is that?
If
understand body language, that means yes. If they do that, okay. Yeah, and that is indeed, he says, in other countries, if you do this, you say no. I'm sure you've heard that. So, in South Africa, if you do this, it's yes. My sister, can I confirm that you say yes?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you very much. Let's take Kubomana.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, on slide 30, on the EPWP incentive grants to province, I see that it's 387,641. Then we go to slide 31, EPWP infrastructure grant to provincial governments, 331,004.
So what are you raising, Baba? You're raising that the figures are not the same?
Yes.
Okay. Where are you going? 30 and 31. Ne?
30 and 31.
Yeah.
Let me explain. The provinces, you are seeing 387 there because it includes 56 million, which has been given as additional for community works program. That's what makes up the difference. If you add the 56 million for community works program, it will come to 387,641. So it's not separated there and on the slide. It's not separated. If you look at the slide that you referred to, slide 31, we've shown the community works program separated. That 331 plus the 56 will give you the 387 that is on the other slide.
Thanks.
Okay. Ufedimre, you're done. Good. Momadlan. Momadlan.
Yeah. Okay. Chapter 6. You know, my concern is that slides 33, 34, 36, you know, I see these big figures, you know. I'm not sure how big is the project on the slide 33, because we see that the land points of entry, like our Uskelpad Hek, it's so huge amount. Maybe if you can get a breakdown, what is to be done there? Why is so huge amount? And you find that another port of entry, the amount is so little. So the department knows exactly, but as a committee, we don't know what is to be done in this land port of entry. Then the slide 34, again, they are talking about dolomite risk management. Again, same applies there. You'll find that police, there's a huge amount of defense. How do they allocate it? Why do they say this area police needs more money? What's the difference? If they can maybe explain, and is it a huge, is it too dangerous or what? Then on slide 36 again, the client infrastructure. What kind of infrastructure? Because as a committee, we don't understand. Because you go to health hospitals, you ask what's happening here, why are the drainage not fixed? They'll tell you that it's the public works department is not fixing the drainage. You go to another department, they blame the public works. So if you can get exactly what are they intending to do? Because we're not sure which line are they working on other departments, which line are they working on. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Mumadala. I was also trying to look into page 19 of this to check if the details she's looking for are not there. Maybe she needs more than what is here in terms of the projects that are happening. Let me finish with this first. round of questions, and then I'll take the last round, if any. In whatever order.
Thanks very much. I think I will give colleagues to make input, Stanley, Peter, and Manda, and CFO you'll add in that particular area. Maybe you can start.
Can somebody talk to skills development? Who's going to speak to us?
Thanks, Chair. When I presented on the compensation, I think one of the things that we did not mention is the fact that because of the inadequate funding under compensation, we haven't even advertised for bursaries that would normally take as a department. Therefore, we do have an amount, but which is not so huge with regards to skills development. That is the bursaries that we are continuing with the students that we have in the department. And that shortage also of the OSD is part of the skills development that is supposed to be ongoing with the professionals so that we can recruit more professionals, train them, and create a bigger pool. Now, this constraint is actually limiting the intake of more professionals in this area.
CFO, I know English has got a lot of words, but basically you're saying N-O-M-E. There is no money budgeted for skills development basically here. You just say it like that, man. You don't have to make it sound nice. Deni? Radeni?
Yeah,
Ukwilemus? Awana chelet?
No, you wish it well.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, Chair May.
Yes, please, go ahead.
Thank you.
Ahead.
In terms of the targets for the non-state sector, we have undertaken some research to analyze what the number of work opportunities being produced across the NPO sector, the not-for-profit sector, and a whole range of other organizations. So the targets that were set are actually based on research. And when we fed those, when we had to upscale EBLP phase two, when we introduced non-state sector, the target set there was actually based on an analysis of the data collected during the research. That's how we came to those targets. Now, I think that was the one question with regards to the EBLP. I don't know whether there's a bit the, I interpret the second one correctly, just want to check whether there was a question on how we came to the incentive allocations. Can I talk to that?
There was no such a question.
Fine, then I'll leave it at that because that's the second way of target setting.
We'll call you specifically to come and discuss EPWP.
Thank you, sir.
It's a subject on its own. Yes.
Jay, thank you. Can I field a question on Dolomite?
Yes.
As members may know, the department has a Dolomite program which looks at rehabilitating dolomitic problematic ground. It's a multi-year program, but we don't move in where there's no need for it at a particular point in time. So we are guided by the kind of project a particular department may have in a particular year or period of years. So, for instance, Defence is fairly busy at the moment because we're rehabilitating the ground under the waterproof runways. We finished the first runway. There was a lot. This is now for the second runway. So we informed very much by the client requirement for a particular project on a dolomitic earth in a particular point in time. And then if there are available funds that are not specifically allocated to a project, we then spill over based on UAMP's forthcoming projects from clients in future years, and we proactively step in and stabilize that grant. It also depends on the scale of the client's project. Clearly, a runway is a very large infrastructural investment, and hence the allocation reflects that.
Thank you.
Dealing with the land ports of entries, again, the allocation is determined on the scope of what we're wanting to do. I'll start with the Lebombo. The Lebombo border gate between South Africa and Mozambique. In terms of scope, this covers the construction of the office park, the pedestrian facility, the entrance for heavy vehicles, and the bus earthworks, which means that after completion, the Lebombo border post between South Africa and Mozambique will now, instead of one, will have three entrances. entrance for heavy vehicles, entrance for pedestrians, entrance for light vehicles. This job now, in terms of pedestrian facility, this is 90% complete. And in terms of the heavy vehicles, it is 80% complete, which means that the completion, the expected completion for the border gate between South Africa and Mozambique is that it must happen by end of May, so that we're in time for the 2010 World Cup. I must also say that the same work that we're doing on the South African side is the same work that is being done on the Mozambican side, which means that from both countries we'll actually now have three entrances. The Goleta border gate between South Africa and Swaziland, it includes, in terms of scope of application, it forms part of the construction of the new border post facility, and the construction is for the operational area of the border post in the current financial year. The current work there is 80% complete, and in terms of our work, this should be, that border gate will be completed by end of May 2010, ready for the 2010 World Cup. The fuel strip border gate between South Africa and Namibia, it would include, the execution is in three separate phases, and it consists of an operational phase, a residential phase, and the bulk air services. We can confirm also now, Chair, that that border gate is 95% complete and will be ready for delivery and operation before the 2010 World Cup. The Skelpad border gate between South Africa and Botswana, it forms part of the construction also of the new border post, and the scope includes aspects such as the operational facilities, the construction of the actual main border post, the major civil works for road, sewer, and bulk water supply. As we were executing this project, we realized that there are challenges in terms of dolomite underneath there, and that has actually escalated the construction value of the project to the extent that what we are now going to be doing is we'll look at the 2010 contingency plan for purposes of 2010 World Cup without ignoring the future construction of the border post-2010 World Cup as a result of the price escalation because of the dolomite activities. So this is the extent of the details of the land product. The last one, which is titled REM, this one basically refers to your regular maintenance of the border post in all the key strategic land ports of entry between South Africa and other countries in the region. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Nati Spelena, Babukai. I'm taking the last round. After this round, now Siavala, you know. Raise your hands now, or okay. Let me take just small follow up then. Madlala, and then Bradeni, and then Kaila, Guni, and the political head of the committee, and then Mana. In that order. Babu Kabilangitwe. No follow up. All right. Good. In that order.
Jefferson, the clarification we're getting, especially on land ports of entry, is so interesting. I'm not sure whether it is possible for us to get that in writing, you know, as a committee, so that when we do our work, oversight work, we check on these things he's talking about. Thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you very much.
Can I add to that? Because I thought that Mama would come back. What we also need, Mandla, is the total cost of the project, because that would be the allocation for financial year, because that's a very big border post. So I think you need a complete picture, but we can do a briefing document for you.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Madlala. Let's take Bradeni.
Yeah, Chano, this is a follow-up on skills. I'm still a bit unhappy, because when the minister presented, he said we're increasing our professional skill capacity and very fast. Now, at the level where the actuality operations and the actual resources must be allocated, if we don't see how that fast increasing of our professional capacity is done and we are told there's no money, then the question becomes, how are we then increasing public work professional skills? Because if we don't do it, people are the ones that must drive all this 6 billion, 8 billion, and I've said to you, at the top level, these engineers, gas skills professionals are very important because in construction, if you don't have civil engineers who are going to build this road, design them, you can't even create jobs because the ordinary unskilled laborers who are going to work have to work on something that is designed by engineers, otherwise it is going to collapse. So I'm saying they are very strategic because these are kind of occupation that must create jobs for this country. And now if you say you haven't allocated any money there and you are told we are increasing very fast the professional capacity, how are we doing it without resources being allocated? Otherwise, you're going to have to import from Europe, and these guys are overpriced. They just overcharge themselves when they come here. I would rather prepare the ground here. At least 5-10 years, we should be different. But if you're not allocating out of 6 billion, 8 billion, because development is about people. It is people who must develop. That's where you start, actually. Though there are other programs in other ministries, but in public works, we should also see the effort of skills being developed. Thanks, Chair.
You've made a point, Brad Dennis. We're registering as a very serious complaint about the very important mental skills development that is not been taken up in practice. By you want to answer? Write it down and then you'll answer at the end. I'll give you the first, the good way you respond. My sister CFO. Ne? Yeah. Wana kutai ya chisa lento, full pendula. Let's give Fuba Mkuti. Kaila. Yeah, sorry, Kaila first.
Chairperson, there are two issues. One is on the slide and then a comment also on the CIDP based on the answer that we've got. On the slide page 15, slide 30, the allocation for IDT, if you look at 2010-2011, it decreases, as well as the ninth state sector. Also, slide 31, if maybe you can clear us on that one. Then getting to the IDT, the answer we got here is that contractors are looked at, they are upgraded according to the contract they have done, 10% of that amount. That is the answer that we got. And, Minister, I think that is wrong. That is why I said the problem is the board level. First of all, contractors, some of them get funding from development agencies. Some get assisted by hardwares and so and so. So, really, you cannot base on what they have in bank accounts. Emerging contractors do not have, but established contractors do have. Basically, the problem is then at board level. Jefferson, honor the card, he must put in book. So manage this color one by one. The problem is at board level with these emerging contractors. They will remain, they will never, unless you sort out the board issue, Minister. Thank you.
No, just before you leave it, Bahukail, was there no concession on the part of a board member that they are trying to change that regulation because it's an impediment? I think that point was made earlier. So I don't want us to... Yes, please.
No. What I was saying is that at board level, the established contractors are represented, not the emerging sectors. I've checked that point. The emerging sectors, not so you don't know what are the requirements of the emerging sectors. That's why I say the cat cannot manage the rest because they'll kill them one by one. Simple as that.
All right. Now I understand what you say. The cat. No, no, you the cat.
I hope I'm none of those. But Che, the
no,
the,
Baba. Sibalipan.
Okay.
Subwela guwe. Thank you, Babu Kaila, for raising it again. And I'm sure the point is made. Guni.
Che, thank you very much. You know, my question would be, I think what the CIDP is coming up with is very interesting. Actually, it tells us that you are going somewhere. But the question that, you know, comes into my mind is this: when did they realize that this thing is an impediment? Because all along, they thought that they are on the right track. But I'm saying, if they can, you know, look at themselves and say, are we winning in our program? I mean, they should have done this some time ago. I mean, you can't come today after 5 years or so, having suppressed our people for this long, and say to us, no, we have seen after 5 years that we've been suppressing contractors, imaging contractors. Therefore, today, we must change. Now, you know, it doesn't answer the question that says, what about those that were disprivileged by this exercise? How do you say excuse to them? Sorry, we were negligent by continuing using this system to because this system, Chairperson, we said it, that putting a transformation agenda this side and with this system, I'm telling you, it's still privileging those that were privileged previously. It's for those that were privileged, are still making. You look at your stocks and stocks, Marian Robert and so on. They are still top there. They qualify for projects of 100 and something million rand. But your own fellow disprivileged individuals or entrepreneurs or imaging contractors are still down there. You see, now, for me, it doesn't make sense that we must wait 15 years before we can see the light of the day as imaging contractors. It does not make sense to me. But however, let's leave it because my fellow colleagues have hammered on this point sufficiently.
You can
enough.
Call them comrades.
I want to use the word comrade, but I think I'll be trampling on other people's toes. Let me use the colleagues.
Okay.
Let me go to this one. You know, we've had this long, very long explanation of the extension of GIAMA to principle to local government. To me, it does not make sense. Jefferson, when the parliament enacts an act, that becomes an act. That act must be applied in the country. It cannot be a proposal of some sort that this thing must apply only at a particular level. At a particular level, no, we must still go to... No, it's wrong. This is an act. This must be applied at the local government, at the provincial government, at the national government. It's an act in the country. We must not even try to make any justification of whatsoever nature that Mega Kwale, she was trying to do. We can't allow that. We must just stop. From here onwards, this act must be applied, fix and class. In conclusion, we must borrow these terms from the Honorable Jacques Levy to use the Finnish and clubs. We are saying here in the property incubation program. Can I plead with the Honorable Department to say, can they put together some sort of a presentation in this one? Because this one needs a presentation on its own. You can't just in a small few words and say, this thing is very deep. It's not just, you cannot in a shallow way and say to us that we also call upon people who want to be incubated in the entrepreneurship, property management and so on. You must present something that says, that covers all the areas. That is the area that includes who qualifies, when does it qualify, when this thing is implemented, where is it implemented. Also give us, you know, a broader picture to say that for us as
let's call ourselves police of the department. Go there and check whether this thing is happening. So, I think we can't have beautiful words only. We must have those beautiful words implementable. You know, they must be practical. We can't have only. Can I plead with you, Chairperson, that a presentation on this one be done so that when we go out there as politicians telling our people that in this department there is this thing, we are able to substantiate it, that it's a maya solid, 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 solid. Thank you.
We agree on that one, so that we dispose of it. That the PMT should be, we should have a holistic presentation and so on and so on. Yeah, PMT. So that's agreed, Dawn Kuli. We'll come back to that one. You see, the Giyama one, I hear what you say. And you were using the Tegisi Levy Finish and Clar here. But it's not their story, it's our story. It's our story because this parliament has passed this legislation without including the local government. There were conditions that we said we'll come back to at a later stage. So we'll have to work together so that she doesn't feel guilty where she's seated, that she's the one who's stalling it, that extension. The Deputy Minister did address that in the beginning also, to say that those conditions will have to be looked into as well as we deal with this issue. So we'll come back to that one as well, just to dispose of those. But we'll come back to the CIDB one, we'll come back to it in terms of why so late in the day. Is it not better late than never? But we'll come back to that answer. Yeah? Okay. And now, you know, I don't know. Is it age before beauty? Or what do we do? Can you decide who speaks between the two of you? You want to speak first?
Yes.
Okay. Age before beauty.
Age before beauty. Okay, thanks, Jay. It's unfortunate that I'll have to touch on some of the issues that were discussed by the my colleagues. On the issue of CIDP. It's unfortunate that we have got these conditions, and unfortunately, most of the projects are funded by the government. And really, the amount of money that goes to the already established contractors is disheartening, or whatever. It makes us feel bad because we've got a mandate from the people on the ground as to what we're supposed to be doing for them. So now we're looking after the already established contractors. I just wanted to add that on that one. On the bills that are on the pipeline, it's unfortunate, Chairperson, that the CBE bill is not on the pipeline. I think as a portfolio committee, would have loved to see it being speeded up, because CBE is really toothless without that bill. The registration of the professionals is haphazard, and the problems within between the councils and CBE, there are problems. But you would like to without the bill, there's nothing CBE can do. And we are saying we really need to have our own black professional. But there are loopholes where that is. Secondly, the extension of Kiyama, you have touched on it, but the last question is just, by when can we expect that to happen? On the EPWP, we'd like to have, is it possible to have the quarterly report on the progress on women, youth, and people with disability? At least just to have that quarterly so that we are aware of what is going on. And it was also mentioned that there are going to be provincial visits by the department. I think maybe for us to work together, we'd like to have those reports so that when we do the oversight, the provincial visits, at least you are aware what's going on in each and every province, because I think EPWP is the key on job creation. So in some cases, we find that the department, the provincial level, sometimes hide some of the challenges that they have, and they think maybe we are there to, like, inspect us, but we want to work with them so that at the end of the day, jobs are created, poverty is alleviated, and all that. Maybe if you could also have that report in a summary form as to, so that we're also able to untangle some of the... lastly, on the BEE Property Incubator Program, I think also we need to have a report, probably a quarterly report on that, because there are, for instance, in the Free State, it was sometime ago reported that all the departments in the Free State use just properties from one person. I mean, if we are really serious about the BEE, what are we seeing? I think that's it, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Mom. I just kept quiet because I was laying an offside trap, you see. You said lastly. I was just going to check if you are going to continue. Can we kill this one? I think it's important that your provincial reports, if you can share them in terms of yours, because we are going to do a lot of provincial visits as well, so that we just follow up on some of the issues. So I think that one. So the ones that we have killed already is progress on Giama. We're going to be having a separate discussion on it. The report on the provincial versus and the incubator program. I think that one also. The land port of entry, that detailed report and things like those. Baumana, you're the last.
No, no, thank
you. We reserve to the best for us.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, on slide 35, on the private leases, I think first one must accept the submission by the CFO that to halve expenditure on private leases, the department would be repairing, renovating, and upgrading some of the property belong to the state in order to house some of the departments or whatsoever. But I just want to find out, Chair, if the department has probably thought of the option of building. And the reason I'm saying so is because, for instance, in Mpumalanga, you would find that the department advertises for at least more than a year for office space, and I'm certain they never yield results, because if you come to Balfour and you say you want office space, you'll never find office space there. And advertising on its own is very costly. And I've been very consistent, even in provincial, the provincial government that would advertise for office space, they never yield results, because there's just no office. And to continue advertising, I think we're wasting more money. Have the department probably thought really of building? Because we can spend more now, but we know that we have this, our structure. We can be there for a very, very long time without really paying. Because if we are going to be spending $2 billion per financial year, I mean, the next 20 years, how much would have spent as a department? The thought of building, have you probably tried to visit it? Thank you, Chair.
And maybe just to throw a response in that one. These private leases that you have, are they open-ended? Do you have a termination? What is the maximum, 10, 20 years? What happens? Anyway, can we have short answers? Because it's lunchtime already. We're into injury time now. DJ, you give instructions. You know your team. Who must answer what? Because because I see a lot of hands. You see?
Thanks very much. I think there are three people who are going to respond.
Three people.
That's Peter and CFO. And Stan will just if there will be Peter.
Thank you, Chair. Through the Inner City Regeneration Program, the department is looking to do just that, and we'd like to thank the member for that initiative that he's putting forth. We are looking at the UAMPS as come from the clients, which is looking and projecting their needs into the future, and we're running feasibility studies to look at government complexes. There are other reasons as well. For instance, in Bloemfontein, it's 90% owned by one person, and we'd like to diversify who we're even leasing from. So to address the leasing aspect and also to address the ownership aspect, linking to the capital funds that we have, we are trying to get a program like that going. Thank you.
Before I run away from that, you see, is there meat into that program? Are there tangibles there? Are you just intentions, or do you have tangible? Can we get examples of what is happening somewhere else that addresses the question? You know, the government always has good intentions, but in many instances, that's where it ends. In this one in particular, do we have tangible progress somewhere?
Chair, thank you very much. We do have a program. We're running feasibility studies for all the range of public works regional offices because we have control over our own budget. So our first initiative is to champion that. But we also look and work with our clients in terms of their permanency in a particular place. And working with them, we then develop a final solution. But I think what I can put on the table is the public works regional office program for the current year. Sasa will field a question more broadly for the client department.
Are you saying public works regional program? What do you mean? Is that the tangible thing that you can talk about?
Chair, those regional offices which are leased, public works regional offices that are leased, we're running a feasibility study program to look at developing new regional head offices for them, which are our own buildings. Bloemfontein is currently at the end of constructing a regional office where prior to that it had been leasing. So we're turning a leased building into a final office situation that government owns at the end of the day.
Oh, I see. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Just adding to what Peter said, yes, the thinking is constantly there because in terms of the YAMO, we produce now the second set of user amps. And like Peter said, we've generated feasibility studies, et cetera, and all 90% of the outcomes of those feasibility reports recommend the construction. So we've gone now to National Treasury to request an adequate budget. But in the interim, the solution, unfortunately, would have to be leasing. What we do at the moment is we look at how long the construction that we recommended will take, and we recommend leasing in around that. So the leasing can be anywhere from 5 years to 7 years that we recommend to the regions. But obviously, the construction is subject to an appropriate budget being given by National Treasury, or if we can use an alternative model of delivery like a BOT. Currently, most of the office accommodation, unfortunately, we're not building big office accommodation except for Bloemfontein. Now we're mainly concentrating on refurbishing and upgrading and using the existing. However, there are solutions in place, like we've acquired the Salvacop land, where we want to build government precincts and put more client departments there. And we have appealed to National Treasury for budget in this regard. So we're crossing fingers that we get that. But the thinking is constantly there. There's a business process in place that there is no lease that will go out that is over 2,000 square meters that doesn't go through an options analysis and a feasibility study. So that's going through right now. We can say that,
Are you saying the maximum lease period is 7 years? Is that what you're saying?
Are we saying anything from 5 to 7 years?
Do you have any leases beyond that?
We do. We have leases that we've procured for 10 years. That will be subject to basically the client requirement. In some stages, the clients are in existing buildings, and we've just asked the options have just been concluded. So it's running within that period. So basically the recommendation would be that the lease will end. Say it depends on the time that the lease started. So we will, our options align to the lease period. So if a lease is going to be ending in the next 8 years, our recommendation will be for a building to be completed during that period. Basically, where we want to go is our strategy that we have now is that we want to own 70% and lease 30%. So that's what we are working on now.
What is the current situation?
Currently, we have extensive leases. We have about 6,000 leases. Relative to the portfolio size of...
What is the percentage of leasing vis-a-vis ownership? If you don't have that, maybe we can talk about it. Let me tell you why I'm doing
it. We'll work it out. It's about, it's over 30%.
Over 30% of what?
I will have to count the offices. I don't have that number.
Let me tell you why we've been doing some research as well.
Mm-hmm.
To check the ownership. We've started with the ownership of Parliament, the ownership of the Union Building, the embassies that we have. We're doing our own research on this matter.
Mm-hmm.
And the preliminary desktop research shows that you are leasing far more than what you own. Okay? That's the situation. That's why we are fielding these questions to say to you, this is not value for money. You see, that's the point we are making here.
Yeah.
We are building for posterity here. We know that we are just holding this situation now for the generation to come. We are very serious about this country owning itself. So we are busy with that process. We want to work with you on that. So start putting together your profiles very intelligently, because that's the matter that you're coming to return to. We are unhappy with the situation as it stands. All right, the next one. CIDB, Kubekela.
Thanks, Chair. Very briefly, the question, why did we realize that thing now, and related question. Chair, obviously, I wouldn't speak for the previous board why they didn't do that. I was not a board member. I'll speak as to why the current board is doing it. In terms of the Act, the board of CIDB is appointed for a period not exceeding 3 years. So the current board was appointed in 2007, which means its term of office expires this year in September. What then happens is that annually the board produces what is called review reports. And in one of the review reports that we discussed in the board, this matter came to the fore to say what are some of those factors that are interpreted to be creating obstacles for the participation of emerging contractors. Also importantly, Chair, is that we've been having bilaterals with, amongst others, the South African Black Contractors Association, and so forth and so forth, to try to enter into discussion as to saying how can we find an amicable solution in terms of what they have identified to be some of the challenges in the regulations of CIDB which might be seen to be impeding. And generally there is a consensus on the basis of these bilaterals with the Black Contractors Association, the Emerging Contractors Association, to say, amongst others, there is generally a consensus that three are some of the regulations which are being seen to be impediment. The first one is a question of degrading, which means that for 3 years, contractors are allowed to be in the CIDB register. And after 3 years, they are being reviewed. And on the basis of the performance that a particular contractor went through for a particular period, a conclusion is reached to say, if you have not performed, you are actually degraded. And the point that contractors raise to say, what if you don't get an opportunity for the past 3 years? Why don't you just remain in that particular grade as opposed to being degraded? That first point where there is general consensus, Chair, to say, if we can push this recommendation through Department of Public Works and Ministry of Public Works, we can create space for the participation of Black contractors. The first one, the second view where I'm saying there seems to be general consensus is a matter I've raised earlier on, to say one of the regulations actually says that you should have as a contractor in your employ a professionally registered person before you can actually bid for a tender in the public sector. And the question that black contractors were raising is that, what do you do with my contractor? I didn't get any tender from government. You are expecting me to keep these professionals who are very expensive in my employ and actually pay them. Why do you do that? What you're actually doing is that you're punishing me by me using my own cash to pay for these professionals. Whilst on the other hand, I don't
care. You made that one. Go to the
yes.
third one.
And then the third point yes. here is, what would be the acceptable threshold in terms of the turnover based on the monetary value of a particular contract? So, Chairperson, I'm saying that those in the current board, those are discussions that we've been having as to saying, what can we do? And in our assessment, these are the three most fundamental factors which are being seen to be impeding the participation of black emerging contractors in the construction industry.
Thank you very much, Brahmandla. You're doing very well. I think there are two more. EPWP and CFO, eh?
Yes. Thank you, Chair. Two questions with regard to EPWP. With quarterly reports, whether we can submit that for the designated groups. And the other one was on the report, the provincial visits, and the answer to both of those, yes.
You are allowed to say no. Okay. But it's definitely yes.
They are generated, they will generate, and I'm saying we will be sharing it with the portfolio committee.
You're not doing it under duress.
No, sir.
Okay.
No, sir.
Oh, okay, okay. That's, yeah. CFO, you are the last in this round, and then we can take the DG and the minister to just say a vote of thanks, and then we go and eat. We don't have lunch arranged there. Okay, so Indo, that's Bonene. Okay, you've heard.
Thanks, Chair. Just to respond on the issue of the skills development in terms of funding, the budget is inadequate. That's what we are seeing as a department, and through the cost of efficiency savings, that is why we are able to shift money to try and deal with those initiatives. It's not like there is nothing at all in the department. Yes, we do have, because we've got an intake of interns, but not at the scale that we would have preferred as a department, given the professionals that we need in our employ.
You see, when our mothers are doing very well to lull the babies to sleep, to do so bala mapa, so on. This is a serious matter, my sister. It doesn't need that type of response to say we'll see where we can find the money. You've got to be bold here to say the country needs the skills development and budget for it. Let it be refused somewhere that we engage. This is a matter that will come in our report. It's a strong issue. You see, not only for this department, other departments as well. We're not doing very well. Even the universities are not doing well. I can tell you that now. In terms of skill production, and so what we produce in terms of scientists, engineers in the country is not what South Africa should be producing. So I hear what you're saying, Mama. You're doing very well in terms of that to try and make it sound nice. But, hey, we are failing in this. The country is failing in skills development. That's the stronger point I wanted to make. Vision. Acting. Have you applied for this position?
No.
Okay.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair, members. All we can say is that we have noted all the areas that you have raised with us. We will take them as lessons to improve on areas that we need to improve when we're implementing. We will ensure that in all the areas that have been indicated that we provide reports, we do so accordingly. And then we really appreciate that you gave us the opportunity to engage on these programs, and then we are quite confident that you will definitely assist and support us in areas which we need assistance, like funding in the areas of skills development and so forth. I do want to appreciate this opportunity. Thanks very much.
Minister, I'm sure you have the last word after. No. Oh, okay. The white paper.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, the white paper. The person, we didn't deal with this one.
Fine.
But I just want to, maybe the department must just go back, and when they come back, they got so many targets that are presented, which is good to achieve them, but
there is no baseline to work from, if they can come with a baseline.
No, no. Fair point. Thank you very much. We just recognize your white paper with all the details at the end that I don't think it was intended for. Okay? Where is the next one? The details at the end. Okay. No, but the white paper is loaded. Minister, you see, compared to, you must give credit where credit is due. Compared to what we got the last time, and to this, we must say to you 10 out of 10. Not because only just it's glossy and so on and so on. Obviously, we are going slowly through this, and you can see that a lot of work has gone into this. Which I was just jealous because your photograph alone in this glossy thing is taking away the beauty that we have in this department. You see? Your smile is fine. I like it, you know. I'm going to take this to the constituency. But you were supposed to have a deputy minister there, yeah, to just show that we've got this beautiful, cadre of the movement as well, what you and so on. And I don't know. Vukela says that he has not applied for this position, and I would understand why. He has gone through grilling this man. Scopa and everybody else. I think I understand why he's running away. But the new DG would be coming in. We'll get a good basis starter. Thank you very much. Ne? Because it looks like by the time we come back, we'll be having a new DG. If it's not you, thank you very much for the hard work you've put into here. You've taken all the heat. And I'm sure you've emerged a stronger person. Minister, thanks for deploying a cadre like this who can be able to take the punch with a smile. Okay. Over to you, sir.
Chair, as I said earlier, you know, when I recognized the role that the acting management has played, all of them, not one of them said to me, no, Minister, we don't want to assist or we're afraid. They took on the task, and that's why I'm very appreciative of them. But, Chairperson, let me thank the honorable members of the committee for the constructive manner in which they've engaged us as the department. As I said in the beginning, that we need Parliament, we need the committee, and certainly this has assisted us to see things from a different perspective. A number of issues need to be followed up. We've taken notes, and some of them will need their own presentations and further discussions, but I think it's good that we've had this interaction and we've had sufficient time to do so, thanks to you, Chair, and the excellent manner in which you have chaired this meeting. And all the contributions that members have made and their understanding of the very complex mandate of public works. It's not a simple department. It's very complex. And one day when we go a little bit more into the devolution of budgets and custodianship, you'll see how much more complex it gets. And sometimes we get blamed for things that are not our responsibility, but we'll deal with that when the time is right. But, Chairperson, let me also say that as Minister and Deputy Minister, we also interact with in different public fora. We have questions and answer sessions. We're aware of some of the problems that are being raised here about CIDB. In fact, we are the ones that have alerted the board to a number of these problems and said we need answers. But I must also remind members that the CIDB, in fact, is there by an Act of Parliament, an Act of Parliament 2000. So we are guided by that act, and until we amend it, and I think it's necessary that we review it. So it's been there for 10 years. There have been some shortcomings. I think it's time to have a look at it. I don't think that's a problem. We need to address that. And given the financial constraints, Chairperson, in the country, in our fiscus, I think the CFO and the acting DG and their team have certainly tried to come up with a very balanced budget. It's been a very, very difficult process. And I think on the skills side, Chairperson, maybe we need a separate discussion on that because we are as concerned as you and the committee are. Because this straddles not only one department, it straddles the whole of government. And we've got some ideas that we'd like to share with the committee as to what we think can happen. But we also need to look at some of the shortcomings in the skills pipeline, if you want to call it that. If I just give you one example, not all the universities that teach engineering subjects are registered. So you could send your son or daughter to a university one, and that university is not registered, but they do a particular engineering diploma or degree. Whether they'll be recognized at the professional councils is another issue. So we've got to be careful about some of the challenges that are there, and we've got to look at how we put our heads and hands together to address these issues. So I think maybe that needs a separate discussion, because we are as concerned as Honorable Kekana about skills development. But Chairperson, thank you very much for a very constructive meeting. We've learned from it, and certainly we hope that we'll grow from strength to strength with the cooperation and the guidance of the committee and yourself. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your kind words, and all the your staff members and the Deputy Minister. Thank you very much for sharing this with us. We're just looking forward to moving from strength to strength. And honorable members, thank you very much. This meeting is adjourned.
Can I just ask that the document you referred to, it seems as though it didn't go through the proper process. Can we have it withdrawn, please?
Is it the white paper?
Yes, please. We don't want to have to come back and give you another version. Let's rather complete our work.
Okay.
That one slipped through in an act of generosity.
Okay. No. It was withdrawn. But it was withdrawn after the meeting, eh? After I've adjourned the meeting. So if you don't get all copies, it's not official. Okay. Thank you.